using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Monday the 30th of August, year of our Lord 2021, day 534 of America Held Hostage. Today we're going to take a look at the rapidly escalating martial law. That's right, martial law. It's already well on its way in Australia, and it's coming here. The only difference is the speed at which it moves is what the people will put up with at any given moment. And we have people in the military bragging about civil war, and we'll take a look at what happened in Afghanistan, comments from parents, and the obvious incompetence, ruthless incompetence of our leadership. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And of course, we also had Alex Berenson being taken off of Twitter permanently. The question was always not if, but when, because this is the world that we live in now, where corporations are allowed to rule over us. This is something that even as we look at the results, and this has been going on for a long time. It began with speech, and now it is moving into this entire lockdown and pandemic. And yet you still have organizations like Reason, libertarian, they say, except what they are is corporatists. They excuse everything that corporations do. Corporations can do no wrong. Government can do no right. That's the position of the mainstream libertarians. For the Democrats, government can do no wrong. For those authoritarians, the authoritarian left, government can do no wrong and corporations can do no right unless it's the corporations who are implementing the government edicts. And now the left that has always hated corporations loves corporations. I made a comment about Mitt Romney saying, "Your liberty affects my health." I had something to say about that. I guess I was surprised at how much more engagement that tweet got yesterday morning. I put that out just before I went to church, and I came back, and wow, a lot of comments, all of them almost negative. And so we'll talk about that. A lot of people who, I guess the people who are checking Twitter on Sunday mornings, rather than being in church, are not my audience. I had a lot of death threats. I probably had more death wishes, I should say, not threats. More death wishes from that one tweet than I've ever seen before. Not that I'm afraid. They have no power of life and death. I was busy elsewhere. Engaged with the one who does have power over life and death, not with these people on Twitter. So it doesn't affect me at all. But what we're seeing here is the throttling of speech and now the throttling of our liberty through the throttling of our health care and the rest of these issues. But it's much more serious than that because we've got increasing indications, of course. Every day that passes, we get another indicator that our government is itching to go to war with us. And, of course, this all began even before the election, where we had people like, first it was Eric Swalwell, then Beto O'Rourke, then Biden. In order to curry favor with their base, they were threatening to engage in a civil war against gun owners. We have the military, we have planes, we have nuclear weapons. All you've got is those penny little rifles. They were talking to us, not to the Afghans. How did that work out for them in Afghanistan, by the way? But let's take a look at where this is, because when you look at Australia, as WND's headline says, it's no longer a conspiracy theory. Australia is building quarantine camps. The Queensland Premier said they're going to do it to combat the dangerous Delta variant. A dedicated Regional Quarantine Center will be built. They said that we need to have fit-for-purpose quarantine facilities, she said in a post on Twitter, adding that Australia needs regional quarantine facilities to keep us safe. It's a no-brainer. Oh, really? This is a virus that kills less than 0.5% of the people that it engages with, even if you believe their inflated statistics. But this is what it looks like in Australia. Looks to me like they're trying to contain people, not a virus, doesn't it? Looks to me like a bunch of jackbooted thugs ready to go to war with their own people. That's exactly what this is.
Oh, they're shooting rubber bullets!
Point blank, shooting rubber bullets at people. Pepper spraying everybody there. This is the situation we had a couple of weeks ago.
Stuff that's going on here. The police started... They pulled out some sort of gun with rubber pellets or whatever there is. Empty ammunition. And they're just firing these pellets into the crowd. It started spraying everyone indiscriminately. Media, doesn't matter who it was. Everyone was being sprayed and just, it's just chaos here. And I think it's completely unnecessary chaos because the people have already gathered here. They're already protesting. This is just a show of force, a show of control.
Look at that. A literal army of cops unleashed against peaceful citizens. Standing for their liberty. Not violent, but the cops are. All right, so you get the idea. That's from the real Ruxan, R-U-K-S-H-A-N, who put that video compilation together from Australia. And, of course, you must have quarantine facilities, regional quarantine facilities. And we have to put people there who aren't even sick. I mean, if you get a test that they've already admitted, cannot distinguish, we're going to get rid of the PCR tests come December. They're just giving a little bit of time for the companies that have been bought by Soros and Bill Gates to get their alternative together so they can make money off of this scam. But they admit already that their PCR tests cannot distinguish between COVID, between the flu, between RSV, between the cold. It's one of the reasons why we've seen the flu drop to zero over the last year. They will interpret it. They will be the ones who decide what it is. It's not a test. It's a dictate. It's a label attached by these people. You have people who are not symptomatic that are going to be put into quote-unquote quarantine by a test that they admit does not work. What can we learn from Australia about COVID tyranny? And also, what can we learn from Afghanistan, writes Brandon Smith, altmarket.us. He says despotic people tend to telegraph their future actions like inexperienced fighters tend to telegraph their punches. It's not as if the intentions of totalitarians are obscured or hard to predict, exactly. Especially if you've been watching these people. I've been watching. One of the reasons I knew this whole thing was a fraud from the very beginning is because, unlike a lot of people who were taken in by it the first couple of months, I'd been watching Fauci and the CDC and the NIH for years. For years. It was just a repeat of the same game they run on an annual basis to try to coerce people into getting flu shots. In some cases, they may even believe that they can be as obvious as they wish because they assume that no one will ever try to stop them. They've been destroying lives for so long, they adopt a sense of superiority as if they were untouchable. You know, kind of like this.
The people, my people are so smart. And you know what else they say about my people? The polls. They say, I have the most loyal people. Did you ever see that? Where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay? It's like incredible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what we've seen over the last year. The ability of these psychopaths, like the one you just saw there, to continue to mislead people with no consequences. Brandon Smith says, in my extensive study of psychopathy, I find that, unfortunately, the primary catalyst for exploitation and victimization of large populations of people is that many of them can't wrap their heads around the idea of an organized conspiracy of human monsters, or that they'd be lied to. They refuse to acknowledge the existence of the evil right in front of them. So he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue. He knows that. See, the thing that's different about Trump is that he admitted it. They all know that. Hillary Clinton knew that. Obama knew that. Biden knows that. If he knows anything. I don't know if he knows anything at this point in time. But all these politicians know that. They know that no matter what they do, their little club of partisan loyalists will follow them, regardless. They also know that they'll have a big crew of apologists in the media, whether they're left or right, whether they're Democrat or Republican. They know that they can count on key people in the media to spin it into 4D chess or whatever lie they want to tell you. He was just different in the sense that he just admitted it. Admitted what they all know, what they all believe, and how they all act. And so Brandon Smith says they refuse to acknowledge the existence of evil that is right in front of them. So the evil is able to go unopposed for long stretches of time, especially because you've got a lot of people whose interest coincides with supporting that evil, whether they're businesses or bureaucrats or press. There is always a moment, though, when psychopaths push the wrong people too far. You know, John Kiriakou, who I've interviewed multiple times, and he was the CIA agent who blew the whistle on torture. Gina Haspel, of course, covered up that torture, destroyed the video records of it, and as a result, she was promoted by Trump to be the head of the CIA. But John Kiriakou went to jail for exposing what was done. None of the people who violated the law went to jail. None of the people who used the fake intelligence that they obtained based on that torture to lie us into the Iraq war, which Trump himself, everybody knows, the lies about weapons of mass destruction were garbage. They know that we were lied into the Iraq war. And yet you promote the person who obtained that, who covered up the illicit means of obtaining that. You see, torture is not only illegal and immoral, but it's also not pragmatic, because they can use that to lie you into a war. And so John Kiriakou, who I've interviewed multiple times, he said, you know, and he's about the only person that ever worked for the CIA that I would trust, because they jailed him. He served his time. He got out. He wanted to get his record clear. He wanted a pardon. He asked for a pardon from Trump. He was met with Giuliani and a couple of Giuliani's henchmen. After talking to them a little bit, because he'd like to get his record cleared, because, you know, even after you've done the time and you're released, it still has implications for what you can do. It's a black mark on your record. Shuts down a lot of opportunities to you. And Giuliani got up and excused himself to go to the bathroom, and while he was gone, the aides told John Kiriakou, it'll cost you $1 million. He said, well, you obviously don't know who I am. I don't have $1 million, and if I did, I wouldn't give it criminals like you. John Kiriakou is a man of integrity, unlike Trump, Giuliani, and their counterparts in the Democrat Party. But one of the things that John Kiriakou told me in an interview once, he said the CIA is looking for sociopaths. Sociopaths. He said they want them right up to the line of psychopath. Unfortunately, many times they go over. When it comes to organizations of psychopaths, the same moment also eventually arrives. It just takes longer for the public to come to grips with the necessity of it. In terms of the Great Reset agenda, writes Brandon Smith, medical tyranny using COVID as a rationale is clearly a key ingredient to the future objectives of the power elite. Well, of course, and it was April of 2020, last year, that I had been talking about medical dictatorship from before the executive order that began all this stuff, declaring a national state of emergency by Trump 534 days ago. I'd been talking about it so much that one of these leftist publications, I think it was the Daily Beast, did an article on me and some other people who were calling it a medical dictatorship, saying we were over-the-top paranoid conspiracy theorists. Brandon Smith says, I call this the wave theory, the use of intermittent moments of limited freedom, followed by increasingly more aggressive restrictions. The way I described it was, I said they're going to turn our freedoms on and off like a light switch. I had somebody at InfoWars question me about that. Where's your document? Where did they say they're going to do that? It's like, say they're going to do it. You know they're going to do it. They've said it in so many words, they didn't exactly say it that way. Where did they say they're going to do this like a wave? You know, you get a wave of this and they pull back and then, you know, have a peak and then a trough, a tyranny and lockdown. No, they're going to turn it on and off like a light switch, and that's exactly what they're doing. They ease up from time to time, but it's not over. We're just on parole. And then they can lock us back up for any imagined parole violation. The cycle is meant to condition the public, says Brandon Smith, to the idea that governments are allowed to micromanage our daily lives, that somehow this is normal, that it's for our own good. I've warned consistently that all governments around the world would eventually try to adopt proof of vaccination requirements in order for people to participate in everyday activities, such as going to public venues, going to school, shopping in stores, or even getting a job. Of course, yes, we knew that was the case because they had talked about it for a long time. They've talked about it for decades, frankly. Agenda 21, UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainability, the Great Reset, they're all saying the same thing. They create the technologies here in America, and then they test them out in China, and they're bringing it back here. If you expose the truth of an authoritarian plot, the establishment lies and calls you a conspiracy theorist. Then once the establishment admits to this plot, and then you refuse to comply with what you said was going to happen, those same liars call you a terrorist. That's the way this works. That's what's coming. We said that the people that fight against vaccine passport tyranny would be quickly labeled as traitors and terrorists, yes, putting others at risk because we're too selfish to bow down and take the experimental jab or to submit to the lockdowns. That's what I experienced this week as I pushed back against Mitt Romney, saying, your liberty interferes with my health. Mitt Romney is at liberty to go lock himself up, put on his mask, inject himself with whatever he wants. You know, preferably some mind-altering drug because he's got a mind that needs to be altered. He's free to do any of that stuff. What he's not free to do is to make demands upon me. So we said that people come back against this would be considered to be too selfish. That's why we're going to kill everybody. That's the whole thing. And now, see, the bringing this up. First, we were going to kill Grandma. Now you got people like Geraldo Rivera and others saying, and Kathleen Sebelius, who used to work for the Obama administration, both of them, same week. Interesting. I wonder where they're getting their talking points, because they've got the same talking points. Both of them saying through the week, you're going to be killing my grandkids. I'm not going to let you do that. So first it was killing Grandma, and now it's going to kill the grandkids, who, even with their rigged statistics, it shows that they have a zero risk from this, statistically zero risk from COVID. They don't have a statistically zero risk with the vaccines, however. So this is DHS recently announcing that one of the warning signs of potential terrorists includes opposition to COVID mandates and vaccines. And so this is an escalation. And, of course, this last couple of days, we've had another very important escalation, another indication, another telegraphing their punches of where they're going to go next. And we're going to get to that in just a moment. Brandon Smith said, I also predicted the ultimate goal of the COVID agenda will be to create domestic travel restrictions and state and city checkpoints, not to mention COVID camps or prisons for the unvaccinated. Well, look. When we're talking about having to have papers to enter into businesses, that is a state and city checkpoint everywhere. And, of course, this is already being done in Australia. Going back to July, they started putting in these QR codes where you have to check in all the time. That's what they would like to do here. And we'll talk about why that's not happening here yet or in other places of the world. So, as I point out, the state of New York hinted at COVID camps many months ago, but the real plan is being revealed overseas in other Western nations like Australia and New Zealand. Whatever happens in these countries, along with certain countries in Europe, is going to be tried in the U.S. in the near term. The main difference being that these measures cannot be fast-tracked in the same way here in the U.S. because Americans are heavily armed and have the ability to bury the establishment 6 feet under if we're organized to do so. Let me just give you an electrical analogy of this. You have the same design all across the world. And if you think of electrical circuit, has basically a simple electrical circuit has three components. It's got a power source measured in voltage, that's potential, that's pressure, electrical pressure if you want to think of it. You have in the circuit, the purpose of that pressure is to make electrons flow. We call that current. So the quantity of electrons that are being pushed. And then you have a third component, which is resistance. And that's electrical circuits 101, the most basic level. What we have going around the world is we have the same potential, the same plan, the same types of pressure, the same design for the circuit. We have that worldwide, that voltage. The only difference being the resistance that you encounter in each and every country, or the resistance that you encounter in different regions of the same country. Now, the dictators understand that that resistance is not a fixed resistance. It's not a fixed resistor. It's more like a potentiometer. It's like a variable resistance, a dial, if you will. You know, you got a dimmer switch on your lights. That's what we're talking about here. You know, you slide that thing up or down, and that varies the resistance in the circuit, and the light gets brighter or darker. So what these people are doing is they're working on that variable resistance in each of the countries, in each of the locations within each of the countries. But it's the same design, and it's the same voltage. And they're going to get the same results when we dial the resistance down to zero. Same result. It makes a big difference. I remember, working on my car once, and you know you have a 12-volt battery in a car, right? That's got a lot of power in that 12-volt battery. But it's just it's only 12 volts, and so you can put your hands across those two terminals, and you're not going to feel anything because of the resistance of your body. But one time I was working on something in my car. I don't even remember what it was now, when I was in high school. And I was upside down in the wheel well, and I was trying to make some connection. It was something electrical I was doing, and I accidentally touched the two leads across a piece of metal that had something to do with air conditioning. And in a flash, it just blew up in front of my face. I was like, whoa. Because once it had zero resistance, there was enough power there. It's a small voltage, right? Small voltage. But it had a lot of current capacity in it, a lot of power capacity in it. And once you took that resistance down to zero, it just vaporized that metal right in front of my eyes. Never forget that. Good example of the difference between whether or not we're going to resist, isn't it? This is why, outside of major cities, most Americans completely ignore the mandates and have been doing so for many months, writes Bandon Smith. He said, I once even witnessed a woman in a mask, an obvious tourist, in line at the grocery store, look around herself and realize no one else was wearing one. She suddenly started making weird and very social excuses for her mask to all the people in line, claiming that she actually hates the smell of detergents, and that was why she was wearing it. Oh, there you go. I'm sure that was it. The difference between free rural areas and dystopian cities is stark. He says, frankly, I don't care if someone wears a mask or not. It's a placebo. If it makes them feel better, more power to them. But what is at issue is when these scared, pathetic people try to project their delusions onto everyone else. You know, when somebody comes to me and tells me that they're Napoleon, I don't care, as I've said before. I don't care if somebody thinks they're Napoleon and they want to dress up and march around. But when they start giving me orders, that's where I draw the line. I've said that in regards to the LGBT, people who demand that I use, who dress up, not as Napoleon, but as Josephine. And they start demanding that I use certain pronouns and so forth. It's like, I'm sorry, I'm not participating in your cosplay, your role play here. I'm not going to do that. I don't play those games. But that is what we're talking about here with the pandemic as well. That's why the LGBT agenda is so important to what they want to do, right? We have to, among other things, besides the spiritual moves that are behind all of this, there's also the aspect that we have to jettison any objective reality. The LGBT agenda, especially the transgender agenda, is very, very important for training you into a kind of Orwellian doublethink, where you not only avoid the obvious and then are intimidated into stating what is a lie, but then eventually coming to believe that. Brandon Smith goes on to say COVID's median death rate of 0.26%, a quarter of a percent, is so small that it boggles my mind so many people are terrified of it. I don't think they understand the basic statistics of the situation. 99.7% of the people have little to fear from COVID. The conservative population is fully ready and prepared to stop the agenda cold when the government actually tries to enforce it, and they will certainly try. Here is when we need to understand the horrifying developments in Australia and New Zealand. The lockdowns are now normalized in these places, and the governments need no real excuse for them. They simply announce that there's a handful of COVID cases and the lockdowns must return. A single case will lock down cities of millions of people with a single case, not even symptomatic. Does anybody get a chance to even evaluate that case? Do we get to do another test? No, we'll just go into lockdown based on that pronouncement. You've heard Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand. I played it a couple of weeks ago. Do not talk to anybody. Do not engage anybody. Do not look at anybody, that type of thing. As he points out, that's the key thing, to forbid all social interaction. The beauty of the COVID restrictions is that they're a perfect excuse for a tyrannical government to block public assembly, which helps to prevent the organization of resistance. See, if you contract with each other on the internet, the people they put in charge, the private corporations that they put in charge, will shut you down. And then the cops will come and beat you if you try to meet in person. This is the twin aspects of this. The globalists need the lockdowns to go on forever. In Australia and New Zealand, the assertion is that anyone who breaks them will be targeted for punishment up to and including being locked up in a military-run COVID camp. These are the same measures that Biden and the globalists within the establishment will like for the U.S. It's not a conspiracy theory, it's conspiracy reality. By the way, they laid out the plans for all of this. The CDC did, what they call their green zones. That plan was laid out in July of 2020. This is nothing new. That's what I talked about when I talked about everybody saying, well, look at this. You know, Bill Lee's got an executive order where he's going to let the National Guard and a lot of other people are going to waive all these different rules and regulations to allow people to be involved in medical care. And I said, no, that's about something different. They all knew that it was going to be these employer vaccine mandates, that people, healthcare workers, would be leaving their jobs, many of them. They didn't know how many. And so you see Republican governors in many places putting out these orders, saying we're going to waive requirements, we're going to allow students, we're going to allow retired people to come back without going through and getting going through the usual handshaking process with the bureaucracy to get their licenses and so forth. We're going to allow them to come back to fill these vacancies that we know we're going to force by requiring people to take vaccine mandates. And they did that before it was FDA approved. They knew that was coming. It was coming because of political pressure, not because of science, not because of testing, not because the FDA had followed its requirements. It was coming just because they were pressuring them. And now they're pressuring them to do the same thing for children. And so, well, I don't know. I think the fastest we can do that is the end of this year. It's purely political. It has nothing to do with science or their own regulations. Brandon Smith goes on. He says, let's talk about Afghanistan. How is it possible for a group of tribal cave people to defeat the most advanced military in the world? And, of course, he agrees with me as well. I've said this many times. It's called asymmetric warfare. He said, there's a lot of people who argue that the U.S. military was not allowed to win in Afghanistan. No. No, that's not what happened. He says, this is a misrepresentation of reality. The fact of the matter is that winning was always impossible in Afghanistan. The establishment knew this 20 years ago when it sent the American troops in. They did not need to sabotage the U.S. mission in Afghanistan because losing in Afghanistan was inevitable anyway. The occupation of an entire nation in order to diminish a large insurgency and to impose a cultural shift is an effort that must be accomplished swiftly or not at all. But we've never been able to do that. And that's good news. I've talked about this. I've talked about asymmetric war. I've been talking about the Army wargaming about asymmetric war. If you remember, back in 2013, the U.S. Army War College had a simulation, Darlington, South Carolina. And this is way before you ever heard anything about conservatives and Russia, Russia, Russia that they started talking about after the 2016 election. Now, it's way before, 3 years before that, they'd already been wargaming this out. And so the U.S. Army War College simulation said that you had a bunch of people in Darlington, South Carolina. They didn't like the government. They didn't say why. And they wanted to secede. And they were getting help, all of these John Deere cap people, getting help from the Russians. And so that provided the military. That was a scenario where the military could go in because Russia was helping these guys, right? Made this a different equation by throwing the Russians in. Why do you think they threw the Russians in 2016? To identify them with conservatives. It justified in the minds of those people playing out the war games that they would go to war with rural people wearing John Deere ball caps. Now, there are places, military bases, where they have wargamed out cities, others where they've wargamed out suburbs, and others where they've wargamed out rural areas. I went to one of those, AP Hill, to see the city. I walked through there, reported that live, and it is a detailed city. This is not the type of training that you typically have in the military where there is a war, they bomb out the area, and then they practice going building to building in a bombed out city. You know, you've seen the videos and the war and action movies, how they get on either side of the door, you know, and then come in crossways while somebody's back. So that type of thing. This was not about that. This was a fully intact city. So the corner of First Street and Main. This had buildings. It had hospital, schools. It had a soccer field that was used as a landing zone. It's a very detailed city. They've been training to fight Americans for quite some time, and they talk about that in the context of asymmetric warfare and what they have learned abroad in Iraq and Afghanistan, except they haven't learned that lesson. So the problem is they're going to lose that war when they start it. But the other part of the problem is it's going to have an unbelievable amount of death and suffering on both sides. It is mutually assured destruction. And these people, what we see right now, you know, mutual assured destruction was a policy that was described during the Cold War when both Russia and America had nuclear weapons. Both sides, fortunately, had the good sense not to initiate it. Because if you destroy the other side, you destroy yourself as well. And unfortunately, what they're doing, though, is, and they would still war game how they're going to do a nuclear war. And so they're wargaming how they're going to go, and have been for quite some time, how they're going to go to war with American citizens. I mean, that was 8 years ago. I first became aware of it. I don't know how long they've been doing it. So they've been wargaming how they'll go to war with American citizens. The thing that has stopped it is that they know they're not going to win, and because of the massive losses on both sides. But now we have politicians, and we have the rank and file of the Democrat Party are eager for this, talking about this. The reckless talk coming from the left, the reckless talk coming from these Democrat candidates is far more belligerent than anything I ever saw as a child with Nikita Khrushchev taking off his shoe and banging it on the podium saying, we will bury you. I'm seeing worse than that now from Democrat politicians in the Democrat street threatening Americans with what they're going to do. And we know the path. The path is going to be through this so-called pandemic. Going back to Brandon Smith, he says, in other words, some people think the Taliban are some kind of super soldiers. Well, this is an idiotic take. He said, we've seen, and he shows a picture of the Taliban working out at the gym. I showed pictures of the Taliban dancing, bumper cars, merry-go-rounds. But he said there's also a lot of videos that show their training is subpar. The majority of the combat incidents with the Taliban note their habit of not even looking down the sights of their rifles when they shoot. This leads us to the logical query when it comes to the COVID gulag the globalists want to transplant to the U.S. If the low-rent fighters of the Taliban can fend off the modern military might of the U.S., then how will the globalists expect to control an American insurgency made up of trained combat veterans and experienced civilian shooters who are using guerrilla tactics? Who are they going to get to do this? Who is stupid enough to take the job of demanding papers, of enforcing checkpoints, of arresting those who don't comply in predominantly conservative regions with more guns than people, and with enough ammo to fight at least a couple of world wars? The events in Afghanistan, by the way, let me interject there. You know, you notice the Biden administration has already now just banned the importation of steel ammunition, cheap ammunition, people use for target practice, from Russia, surplus ammunition. That's the purpose of that, is to drive the cost of ammunition up even higher, already in high demand. It's the same type of thing the Obama administration did at the beginning of its administration, telling the military not to sell used brass into the ammunition market to try to dry up sources. They understand that the key path to gun control is not by going out and taking the rifles, but by making sure that you dry up the supply of ammunition, and you begin by driving up the cost. This is the same approach that they take to stopping automobiles. Instead of just going out and banning automobiles and eventually confiscating them, what they want to do is they want to get rid of the fuel to run them, turning them into lawn ornaments. I can imagine in less than 10 years, instead of the wooden wagon wheel that you see in front of a lot of houses, you know, as a decoration piece, you'll see rusting cars that you can no longer use. And you can't sell to anybody because nobody wants to buy a car that you can't get fuel for. And so that's what the Biden administration is trying to do. The Obama administration did the same thing. It was a New York Fort Drum. That was the name of it. Couldn't remember it for a second there. Fort Drum. And you had some pushback on that, but still they told them not to recycle their brass, not to sell it, but instead not to sell it as brass shells, but to sell it as scrap brass, to crush it. Now, that scrap brass has a much lower value than something that is already formed into a shell that can be used for reloading. And then sell that crushed brass to China. This has been the policy all along of the Biden administration, the Obama administration, the gun controllers, to take away ammunition. So who are they going to get to do this? Who is stupid enough to take the job, asked Brandon Smith. Well, the events in Afghanistan show that such control is nearly impossible to maintain over a population that is armed, and that, in the U.S. at least, they will ultimately lose badly. Even if they use unmitigated terror tactics, they will still lose as long as Americans continue to fight. The laws of attrition always prevail. And the law of attrition is based on your will. It's based on how much you love liberty. It's based on whether you're willing to die to pass that on to your children. If that's the case, they can't defeat you. The laws of attrition will always prevail. Technological superiority means nothing. To summarize, the fight is already won, but the struggle has just begun, and we do not want to have this fight, I reiterate. It is mutually assured destruction. It is insanity. But we're being ruled by Nikita Khrushchevs, and we have the communist functionaries and the levers of power everywhere in our institutions, whether they are government institutions or school boards or whether they are the big box retailers coming out of Wall Street. I want to play for you what this looks like. If you want to know why they're pushing soldiers who are committed patriots out of the military with their LGBT nonsense, and now with a vaccine. Here's what this looks like. This is a uniformed soldier who takes issue to a woman who is really kind of threatening that the street is going to move against the government. I disagree with both of these women, but one of them has got a lot of weapons and a lot of hubris and is a lot more dangerous than the other one.
What's up, TikTok? So this happened.
This is a message for our United States military, the Air Force, the Army, the Marines, the Navy. We thought the military took an oath to protect this country. They took an oath to protect our Constitution. That includes enemies, foreign and domestic.
We did take that oath to protect and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. You know, domestic. Like a woman who decided to drive her vehicle through a National Guard vaccination tent. But keep that same energy.
Where are you, military? Because if you're leaving it up to the American people, you need to let us know, because everybody's on the edge of their seat. You've got millions and millions of gun owners that are ready to walk out and just start a complete bloodbath. And we're beginning to wonder where our military.
There's reasons why the military doesn't deploy within the U.S. And if they did, your little good old boy system is not going to fare well for you. Understand that if active duty military actually get deployed within the United States, that weapon is not just pointed at other people, other countries. It's pointed at you. If you do not get in your house when I tell you to, you become the enemy. Martial law. You know, where your rights get curtailed. You don't have all those same freedoms that the Constitution guarantees at that point. So be careful what you wish for and stop opining about things you don't understand. Okay, bye.
Yeah, that little Ellen DeGeneres wannabe. Snarky little LGBT sergeant. That's Army Sergeant Cindy Bronson. Just reeking of hubris. Martial law, that's where you don't have the rights that you think you are supposed to have, right? Isn't that where we are right now? So you just do what we say, because I'm going to be pointing that gun at you. Understand, if active duty military actually get employed within the U.S., their weapon's not just going to be pointed at other people. Other countries is pointed at you. That's why we did not want to have a standing army. The founders of this country realized that a standing army would eventually devolve into mercenaries, and then devolve into mercenaries without any character, like that Army Sergeant Sidney Bronson you just saw there. People who are drunk with the power that they have, who care nothing about liberty or rights. This is why you don't want to have a standing army, because they will ultimately wind up standing on you, on your throat. It was Madison who said the weapons of defense abroad will become instruments of tyranny at home. That's why they specifically said we don't want to have a standing army. And, of course, we've had a standing army since the ending of World War II. And we've been at a constant state of war abroad since World War II. And now that war is coming home with that same group of people. If you do not get into your house when I tell you to, you become the enemy. Martial law. And people like this army sergeant believes that she has the right then to shoot you. This is why, folks, this is why they're going to the woke army. This is why they're pushing people out who don't want to get vaccinated. So, get the LGBT in there. Get the double vaxxed people in there. Or as I called them over the weekend, the double vexed. These people are vexed. They're not vaxxed. They live in a constant state of fear. I see this over and over again. Karen was just telling me about a reunion, college reunion that some people were trying to put together. And one person that we know who is a radical left school teacher and has been polar opposite to us on this so-called pandemic the entire time. Bragging about getting vaccinated, double vaxxed, or I should say double vexed. And now she's afraid. She just put out a notice. I'm afraid to come to the reunion. Because, it's just too dangerous out there. These people are vexed. They're vexed with fear. And it doesn't matter if they get vexed two or three times with an injection. They'll still be too afraid to do anything. But looking at this Army soldier. So over the weekend, and this, I like the way that Chris Minahan of Information Liberation put this together, a tale of two soldiers. So you just saw the Army sergeant, the LGBT sergeant there. And then here's another guy who spoke out about what's happening. But he was focused on Afghanistan instead of how he was going to point guns at American people, right? That's where the LGBT sergeant wants to address this. That's where she sees the war against the people that she hates here in America. Instead, you had another soldier who spoke out against the Pentagon's handling of the Afghan withdrawal, and others who spoke in favor of killing rebellious Americans under the Insurrection Act. That was the sergeant you just saw there. Now, Marine Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Scheller put out a statement saying, what's going on? We need to ask some questions about what happened in the wake of 13 soldiers being killed here. And he's immediately fired. Nothing has been done to this Army sergeant who is threatening to point guns at Americans and kill them. Just can't wait for martial law, can she? Switzerland is now telling their people, listen to how this came up. You had a daily paper reach out to the government, the Federal Intelligence Service in Switzerland, and said, with the collapse of Afghanistan, everybody's worried about all these Afghans coming into Europe. You got Greece is concerned they're going to be channeled in through Turkey. So they quickly erected a wall to stop that from happening. Even in France, Macron is saying, we can't let this happen. So every country, Switzerland, the press comes to the government, says, what are we going to do to keep these Afghan terrorists from coming in? Because, you know, some of them will be terrorists. Nobody in the U.S., however, is concerned about that. In Europe, they are. And so when they asked the Swiss government, they said, now that you've got the Taliban taking over Afghanistan, how is that going to affect security in Switzerland? Well, the response that they got was very different, because what the government is concerned about in Switzerland is not about Afghan terrorists. They're concerned about terrorist attacks against the vaccination centers. Now, they couch it in terms of saying, there's a lot of people there at the vaccination centers. Are there really any more? I mean, didn't most of those suckers already jab up? And so they said, well, you know, any place that you got people masked, you know, like a vaccination center, they're not concerned, for example, about churches, but maybe nobody in Switzerland goes to church anymore, like most of the Western civilization. Not concerned about shopping centers or markets, right, and Afghan terrorists attacking them. No, the Afghan terrorists will probably attack a vaccination center. Even in Switzerland, the government is being trained to see their own people as threats, being trained that the people who don't want vaccines are already terrorists. So in Brazil, you can understand why the left hates Bolsonaro. Bolsonaro tells his supporters, quote, buy a gun, damn it, unquote. And the press says, why on earth would a Brazilian president tell supporters on Friday everyone should buy a weapon, buy a rifle? Well, you've got rapid food inflation, you've got out-of-control poverty, and he says everybody has to buy a rifle. The armed people will never be enslaved. He said, I know it costs a lot. An idiot will say, but you need to buy beans. And if you don't want to, don't buy a rifle. But do not come to disturb whoever wants to buy it, Bolsonaro told reporters. So it's reported in Latin America's Telesur. Recorded the video. He said, in a country of more than 500,000 people under food insecurity, in the midst of a new increase in the price of food, gasoline, gas, and electricity, now is the time to buy a gun. It is. Because Bolsonaro knows what the globalist plan is. And he's not perfect by any means. None of these politicians are. But he has actually been somebody who's opposed to the globalist regime rather than Trump, who was put in by the globalists to create the Trump shots sent around the world. Activists, meanwhile, in the U.S. are urging Joe Biden to create a gun control office to bypass the Senate. Why? Because now it looks like his gun control guy that he wants to put in charge of the ATF is not going to make it through. You've now had Angus King, who is an independent out of Maine, has voiced his opposition for David Chapman to be put in as head of ATF. I mean, he is a guy who, former ATF, and he has been hanging out in these gun control organizations. So it's clear what he wants to do. He wants to ramp this up faster than anybody else has. Gun control groups, Guns Down America, March for Our Lives, Newtown Action Alliance, and Survivors Empowered are urging Biden to create a gun control office that will not be dependent on Senate support. Let me guess what you would call that. You would call that a gun control czar, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you? They said, your administration is hard at work pursuing important priorities, from infrastructure reform to reducing the disastrous impacts of climate change. But with the rising gun deaths and the heightened threat of armed political extremism, gun violence can no longer be seen as a back burner issue. Politicians have told us for decades that we must wait for the right time to tackle this. We're telling you that now is the time for bold executive action. Where did they get that idea from? Seems like we had a precedent that was set, both for red flags and for gun control by executive order. That precedent was set by President Trump, both of those. And they're now moving along with that. They've extended that idea that you can just ban any kind of attachments without any even discussing it in Congress, let alone amending the Constitution. See, that's a slippery slope. We started to get into gun control by legislation without amending the Constitution, and now we're doing gun control by executive order, thanks to Trump. And already, Biden has worked to do that in a couple of different cases. The members of this gun control lobby asked Biden to create an Office of Gun Violence Prevention. Again, it'd be a gun czar. Politico notes the gun control lobby suggests the leader of the office could be, quote, an aide who does not need Senate confirmation. And you have people who support the Second Amendment talking about one of these issues. I said, you know, it was the bump stock, and now, of course, they're going after a redesigned trigger. It's still semi-automatic. You still have to pull the trigger each time, but it has a reset mechanism in there. So if you keep pressure on it, it will operate like a bump stock. And again, a bump stock required that you have constant pressure on it, and it would repeat fire. So now they're doing it to something that is designed in, but also coming through in terms of regulating attachments. Biden wants to, by executive order, the Justice Department, the ATF, and the president doing the same thing that Trump did, but now this is with stabilizer braces. And as they point out, the stabilizer braces were originally set up to help veterans who had been injured in war. The stabilizer braces, certain stabilizers, would be brought under the purview of the National Firearms Act, requiring the purchasers of said pistols to be fingerprinted and photographed, to undergo an extensive background check, to register their pistols with the ATF, and to pay a $200 tax to the federal government. By the way, that $200 tax is... was a justification for the mass murder of men, women, and children at Waco. That was what it was about. It wasn't under the purview of the ATF that they were going in to get somebody who was sanctioning the marrying of young children. That was the media story that was put out there. I guess that was the first time I saw the ability of the media. And I would also include in that church leaders to deceive people. You had a lot of church leaders who were very anxious at the time to distance themselves, Christians who wanted to distance themselves from David Koresh and the Branch Davidians. And theologically, there were reasons for that. But they threw them under the bus as bad as anybody else that I've seen. And the news media and the ATF focused on this red herring, and that's what it was, a red herring, something, a stinky fish that you bring out to drag across the trail of the fox so the hounds are thrown off. So the ATF trotted out their red herring, saying that it was about underage marriage, which is not their jurisdiction. No, simply because they hadn't paid a tax, and because the ATF wanted to make a show out of it, and because they fought back, and then they killed men, women, and children there. And so now they want to do that with the braces. So what are these braces? The ATF approved the sale of stabilizer braces back in 2012 under the Obama administration. They did it because of the benefit that wounded combat veterans received from the devices. Richard Hudson, Republican of North Carolina, has been fighting the proposed rule by suggesting that the braces are so important to wounded combat veterans that taxing them is the equivalent of taxing the veterans themselves. You see, pull up the picture there, Travis, if you can, of this Breitbart article. They show some veterans who are using those firearms. And, you know, these are people who have literally lost their arms, and now without braces, they'll lose their ability to protect themselves with firearms, because the braces allow them to still be able to shoot a rifle. They want to remove that. So Hudson said the brace concept was inspired by the needs of disabled combat veterans who still enjoy recreational shooting but could not reliably control heavy pistols without assistance. And it is a direct tax on combat veterans. Second Amendment Foundation says the ATF's proposed expansion of the NFA control will not only impact how new pistols and shotguns are equipped with stabilizing braces, but it will also affect millions of existing pistols that are lawfully in private hands that are equipped with stabilizing braces. And if you have any question about where this is going, again, go back to Australia. Take a look at what is happening in Australia. July 12th, they began QR codes, making them mandatory in offices, retail stores, and so forth. And I just reported last week how there was, I think, $35,000 in fines at a church. Part of it was, you know, they met in violation of these lockdown orders. Part of what they fined them for was the fact that the church didn't have any way for people to scan the QR code to report where they were constantly. So you go from gun registration to people registration. You go from gun control to people control, where you control every bit of movement that they have. And I don't just mean travel. I mean every bit of movement. You can't move 3 miles in a day. Now only the vaxxed can get out, and they can get out for, wait for it, get an extra hour out. They get 1 hour out for exercise. They can get another hour now for relaxation. Isn't that nice? You see how they put the chains on and then ease it up just a little bit and then clamp it down again. Over 700 church leaders in Australia have taken a stand against vaccine passports in an open letter to Prime Minister Scott Morrison. More than 700 church leaders and over 5,000 church members and attendees have signed an open letter to Prime Minister Scott Morrison opposing the implementation of a vaccine passport system in Australia. The letter, dubbed the Ezekiel Declaration, and again, we've had the Warrington Declaration here in the U.S. I've talked about that. I've interviewed one of the co-writers of that. It lays out the case for what is legitimate authority, and then it talks about, in the second part of it, how that applies to this medical martial law from a ethical Christian standpoint as well. The Ezekiel Declaration in Australia was authored by three Queensland-based pastors who vowed to passionately resist any vax certification system enforced on the church. Timothy Grant of Mount Isa Baptist Church, Matthew Littlefield of New Bythe Baptist Church, and Warren McKenzie of Biota Baptist Church said they penned the letter after it became clear that there were few people who were resisting the developing medical two-tiered society. Co-author Pastor Littlefield said, quote, "Part of me had been waiting for more experienced and more senior pastors of denominational leaders in Australia to speak up about what was happening, but it was becoming clear this wasn't going to happen anytime soon." Let me tell you, And this is why I talk about Republicans. I don't have a chip on my shoulder about Republicans. It's just that they pretend, at least sometimes, to be on the side of liberty. There is no help coming from either party. Not from the Republican Party either. It's been crickets about most of this stuff. And so there's no help coming from the White House. There's no help coming from Trump. He laid this stuff in on us 534 days ago. So there's no help coming from that, from the Republican governors, from the Republican houses that are captive to the leadership, the party leadership, and to the governors there. There's no help coming from any of those quarters. It's going to be up to you. It's going to be up to you to do this locally. And one of the best things that we can do, I think, is to come together on issues where we're not directly confronting them. You know, there is a bit of a trap when you do protests. And I'll talk about that coming up. When you're just living your life, when you're going to get groceries, or when you're going to church, and these jackbooted thugs shut you down or attack you, it becomes very clear who the aggressor is at that point in time. You get into a big protest and you get some, whether these people are agent provocateurs or just some hotheads around the perimeter, and they start fighting with people, then they can blame that on everybody, as we saw January the 6th. But if you were just minding your own business, living your own life, trying to, you know, have quiet enjoyment of the ordinary things in life that we have taken for granted in the past, and these people attack you, it's very clear then who the aggressors are. No question about it. So this guy says, well, it looked like nobody was going to step up and do it, so I did it. That's where we are, folks. Nobody's going to come to your rescue. It's time for you to do something. He said, I knew many Christians were confused by this. They want to know what pastors are thinking. So many people have heard the Christians argue in apologetics that the church has done much good for society, and now when so much is happening, the church appears to be silent. So the declaration presents five objections to vaccine passports in Australia. Number one, the risk of creating an unethical, two-tiered society. Number two, the added burden on an already burdened society. Number three, the government should never coerce conscience. Number four, arbitrary implementation and questionable science. Number five, the inability of churches to exclude people from worship based on their medical status. There's something that's missing here. And it was something that it was the core at the Warrington Declaration. And that is the discussion of what is legitimate authority. That's why the Warrington Declaration began. And that's W-A-R-R-E-N-T-O-N. Warrington Declaration. Look it up. I signed it. You should sign it. I mean, maybe you don't agree with each and every point. But whatever. I mean, it's still, I think... I think it is right in their understanding of authority. You have to understand what a legitimate authority is, what it's legitimately based on. What is the Christian's approach to legitimate authority versus illegitimate authority? And then a discussion about what this looks like with this medical martial law that we are being pushed into. And so the real issue, you know, we have people like a Christian radio talk show host that says, unless the government tells you to do something sinful, you must do everything that they say, including if they tell me that I got to put on a propeller hat, I got to do that as well. No, the question is the government within the lines of their own authority? Do they have the authority to tell you to wear a propeller hat? No, they don't. When a government... You know, the approach that's being taken by this, you must do everything the government says unless the government tells you to do something that is sinful, like not going to church. Well, how many pastors and churches obeyed that prohibition? They did. And I always said they would if you took that approach. No, you have to understand what legitimate authority is. And once the government is outside of its legitimate authority, the government is sinful. Do you think our government is sinful? Do you think they have the authority to do what they are doing right now? Are they obeying the authority? You know, we have a king in this country. And there is, in other countries, there is a higher law that they swear to as a condition of office. These people are temporary stewards. And once they become unfaithful stewards, once they are in rebellion to the king, which in most Western civilization is the law, once they are in rebellion to the law that they swore to uphold, they no longer have legitimate authority. So then it becomes a question, what do we do about it? What do we do about it? Well, Doug Wilson had a piece which came out on the 23rd. I talked about this case. I got a lot of people upset with me. He got a lot of people upset with him as well. A biblical defense of fake vaccination IDs. That's the name of the piece. And the reality, the reason he's talking about it, is the same reason I'm talking about it. You have to understand where we are right now. You have to understand what is coming. And you need to think about it and what your response is going to be and what you're willing to do and what you're not willing to do. You have to think about this. Just like I mentioned before, Charles van Wyk, who was in South Africa when the ANC Marxists there were taking over the country. And he had to think about, and he did rethink, what he was going to do in order to defend himself and other people in terms of firearms. He was against firearms. He was against shooting somebody. And then he started thinking about it. Well, I have an obligation to defend innocent life and to oppose evil. And so he got a firearm and he trained with it. And with that five-shot revolver that he had, he happened to be one day in a church that had 1,000 people. And later, when they excused all the Marxist murderers and their truth and reconciliation hearings, these guys said, yeah, we picked that church because it was big, had 1,000 people. It was leftist, so we didn't figure anybody would have a gun, and we were going to kill each and every person there. They go in there with about a dozen guys with fully automatic weapons and grenades. They come in a side door, and they throw the grenades in, and they open up fire, and they immediately killed over 50 people. He stood up, and he took a shot at him. Not, I don't think I'm going to hit anything. He went out around the back, came in from another direction, took another shot at him. They said later on, both shots at people. And they figured that there were multiple shooters defending the place, and so they ran away. God works in mysterious ways. It is certainly tempting, says Doug Wilson, to simply make the case that saying a fake pandemic should have fake papers to accompany it, but that would be far too easy, far too glib. I already have severe critics who struggle with their tendency to be censorious, and so that frankly would not help. So I won't start there. He said, and he gives some references to some previous articles he's written. He said, here's something on black markets. Here's that. By the way, you can find all this at Canon Press. I'm sorry, not Canon Press. DougWills.com. DougWills.com. 1L. So he says, I've written before about black markets. I've written before about righteous deception. He puts links to those. He says, here's another one on the propriety of bribing an official into doing his job. Of course, it is a sin to take bribes. That is great wickedness, but there are occasions where it is not a sin to give one. It gives a couple of verses out of Proverbs. And then along comes a piece discussing some of the ramifications of Rod Dreher's Benedict option, where all these issues are in play, and with us now living a lot closer to them. Scripture teaches us that deception destroys comity, and we're talking about this. Comity means that you're the type of society that we used to have. We'd have two or more political parties. Of course, in our situation, it's just two parties. But they agree to abide by the law. They agree to abide by the process. That's not the case anymore. The case today is that they don't get their way. If they're not winning at the game of risk, they just stand up and flip the board over. That's not comedy. Or comedy, I should say. Yeah, it is comedy. but that's where we are. He says, lying is corrosive, but when the Hebrew midwives deceived Pharaoh, they were not destroying anything like that. In other words, I use that example. They disobeyed the government. They did not kill the newborn babies, like Moses, for example. We have many other instances of that. I gave those when I talked about this. Jesus even said, you know, David broke the law, when the ceremonial law, when he and his men were hungry, and they ate the bread that was forbidden to them. But God desires mercy, not sacrifice, said Jesus. Not to be so rigid in this, that you can't understand the greater good. Yes, it is bad to lie, but it's also wrong to indulge in evil as well. So where do we draw these lines? And what is the difference, as I mentioned, you know, lying for your own personal benefit in order to, for your own personal gain, bearing false witness against your neighbors, really what it's talking about. And that is as different from deceiving a evil government that has broken through all of its legitimate authority. That kind of quote-unquote lie, to tell them something, to deceive them, deception, in order to save lives. As Doug Wilson points out, righteous deception. That is as different from bearing false witness as murder is from killing somebody in self-defense. So he said, do we live in a time when the country has already been destroyed? Are we griping our way through a Truman administration, trying to make it through to Eisenhower, but with a recognition that we all basically share the same society underneath? Or are we in a orcs and elves situation, writes Doug Wilson? Or are we somewhere in between? He says, in my evaluation, we're not yet in a hot civil war with shooting and all, but we are in a cold war, a cold civil war. And nothing is more obvious than the fact that we're in a cold war, a cold civil war. He says, I bring this up because there's an optional illusion that is operating here. There will be no doubt a number of conservative evangelicals who will be horrified at what I argue for as lawful. But I would argue that our differences are not over the ethics of the thing, but they're rather differences over a question of fact. And that fact question is, just how diseased has our culture gotten? These evangelicals don't have any qualms about Bonhoeffer's involvement in the plot against Hitler, or over Anne Frank's refusal to turn herself in, or Brother Andrew smuggling Bibles into closed countries. They wouldn't object if a man used fake papers to get his family out of Afghanistan right now. But they think, this is America, the land of the free, home of the brave, America. That's right. As he points out, America, where Baronel Stutzman can have her slam dunk religious liberty case go all the way to the Supreme Court and lose there. That's a case I mentioned briefly. I've talked more about the baker, the masterpiece cake baker in Colorado. But this is a lady who did flower arrangements, a 77-year-old lady who fought this all the way to the Supreme Court and lost when they were forcing her, trying to force her to make flowers as a Christian, forcing her to make flowers for a homosexual wedding. She lost at the Supreme Court, amazingly enough. And now she faces having to pay the legal fees of her opposition, which is going to go into seven figures. This is a 77-year-old lady who had a small florist business. This is America today. Where two dudes, writes Doug Wilson, can get married, and where another dude who works at their company can get fired because he didn't want to come to their wedding shower. Or where Planned Parenthood can chop babies into pieces, sell the parts, all supported by tax money. But the person who gets in legal trouble is a reporter who exposed a particular iniquity. So he says, our horrified evangelicals are those who for some reason still believe they're struggling through a Truman administration. I would point out at the front end that conservative evangelicals generally don't differ on the ethics of this. The differences would arise out of our evaluation of how dire our situation is. Does our situation call for a response yet? Doug Wilson says, my answer to that is yes. He says, about 100 million Americans have refused the vaccine. That is a lot. Noncompliance is not something that's tucked away into a few obscure corners. The reason for this noncompliance are many and variegated. Some are anti-vaxxers generally and so forth. But he said, thousands are nurses and doctors who don't want it. Others are simply public-spirited citizens. You notice how many lies the government's told over the last year and a half. Once the extent of the noncompliance became glaringly obvious, our intelligentsia then decided to make everything better by calling us morons, idiots, and poltroons. That helped us all see the error of our ways, and now we're very sorrowful about it, right? Doug Wilson goes on to say, checkpoints And the papers please the society. Checkpoints everywhere a road passes, for example, from North Dakota into South Dakota. Don't tell me that I have a feverish imagination. I wasn't the one who brought it up. Bans on interstate travel for the unvaccinated wasn't my idea. It's an idea that's being floated in Washington by many in power. And so he said, says, I don't know the future, so I'm not predicting anything specific here. But I think we can discern what the broad and basic options are. I think we're at a place where there will either be a large-scale and successful revolt, or there will be a large-scale catastrophe of an epic magnitude. If there is a successful revolt, it will show up in places like California's recall election, or the election audit battles, and of course the midterms. The party out of power generally registers gains during the midterms, and this may be something that we're going to see this time. He said it may be something of an understatement to say that. But he said to do any good, it'll have to be the kind of thing that makes Mitt Romney put a Gadsden flag decal on his pickup truck in order to claim that he was with the people all along. Yeah, that guy who just said, your liberty affects my health. I think Doug wrote this before Mitt said that. We all know what Mitt was, though, right? Not any question of where he was on this issue or why he would be the poster child of somebody when the revolution comes. Yeah, Gadsden bumper sticker on his truck. So, bottom line, Doug Wilson says, seven principles regarding fake IDs. He says, first of all, if you're in a position to resist openly, do that. Don't go straight to the fake documentation. If at all possible, resist openly in concert with others in your same position. As Rand Paul said, they cannot arrest everyone. So if we all decide that we're going to live our lives in massive numbers, that's it. That's the best way to revolt. That's better than the political process, folks. Just living your life, going to church, refusing to live in fear, opening up a business, and if they come at you with fines, then there's, and if there's enough people in the society that are going to push back against this, then you make it known to your elected officials that they remove those fines, they remove those pressures on businesses, or they're going to be gone. They need to find a different career because we don't want to have tyrants ruling over us in this country. So they can't arrest everybody. If we have massive numbers of people simply refusing to participate, to take the vaccine, there's nothing else they can do. This kind of open strike is to be preferred, especially in the medical field. If, for example, they isolate one nurse and they demand that she take the vaccine or get fired, they've got her. But if 300 nurses say no thanks, and everybody knows about it, they've got the hospital up to a degree. And this is why Bill Lee, Brian Kemp, Bill Lee of Tennessee, Brian Kemp of Georgia, these Republican governors, that's why they started activating the National Guard. But still, if we hang together and we shut this thing down, we're looking at whether, you know, we have varying reports. Some people put it as 30% of the people who refuse to get vaccinated. Others at 45%. Either way, even if you take the lower number, 30%. If you have 30% of the people are going to have to be reduced out of the workforce, so 30% of the people they're going to lose as a business, that is going to take the wheels off the economy if they continue down that road, if we hang together, if we do not allow them to intimidate us. So that's the first option. That is the preferred one. That is not a rebellion against lawful authority. That is an example of a free people refusing to go along with their own enslavement, writes Doug Wilson. Here's his option number two. Secondly, if you're not in a position to resist openly, then feel free before God to resist this in a clandestine way. This will get you through your particular moment and also has the effect of helping to make all the different kinds of vaccines and vaccine IDs into a joke. Third, the legitimacy of using such IDs is not limited to gospel issues only. This is very important for so many of these Christian, quote-unquote, leaders who are misleading people on this issue. Again, look at the Warrington Declaration. But this is not limited simply to church issues. We are called to oppose evil. Just this weekend, I was reading a statement. You know, you had, as a contemporary of Victorian England, had some interesting figures, all living at the same time. You had Karl Marx, you had Charles Darwin, you had on the other side William Wilberforce and Charles Haddon Spurgeon. And so when Wilberforce succeeded, and I have to paraphrase it because I didn't write it down, Charles Haddon Spurgeon pointed out that Wilberforce said to one of his friends, he said, so what other evil can we get rid of after we've gotten rid of slavery? Spurgeon said, that's something that Christians need to be doing. We need to be defending innocent life. We need to be opposing corruption. We need to be opposing briberies and corrupt officers. And these people are being bribed. They were bribed by President Trump 534 days ago. That's what that executive order was about, is unleashing unlimited amounts of money. How many trillions of dollars of paper money will the Federal Reserve print up? I mean, that picture that we saw on Friday of the stacks of $10,000 stacks and little tiny shrink-wrapped $100 bills, fresh new $100 bills, and it's just as far as you could see. How much of that stuff is being done by the Federal Reserve? That kind of lie. We are supposed to oppose evil, and we're supposed to protect innocent life. Third, the legitimacy of using these is not limited to gospel issues only. Don't assume that you could only use such an ID if you were engaged in smuggling Bibles into Connecticut or to New York City. Those days are coming if we don't change this. And again, the change is going to be coming from God. It's going to be a revival of individuals that will cause a revival of this country. This is not something we're going to solve politically. We're just talking about how do we live as Christians in this evil society that we find ourselves in. So he says, these are liberty issues, and any kind of lawful liberty is never a trifle. That said, rank the situations where you would be willing to go this route in order of importance, starting with worship, and then with your livelihood, then with buying groceries, and so on. And that's why I said, I brought up this discussion, because I said, look at this. It's already begun. It began in France, and in other places where they won't let people go into grocery stores. In Australia, of course. As a matter of fact, in Australia, this right here, look at this. No shot, no shop. How long ago do we see, first from Australia, no jab, no job. And now it's no shot, no shop. And that includes food, folks. Same thing in France. And if you think it's not going to come here in America, California already. California, first place where they put the lockdowns in right after Trump did his executive order. They're already talking about bans on retail stores, not making the exemption even that they have in New York on food stores. No, no, no. Not in L.A. City Council there unanimously said they wanted that. Now, the sheriff and the county government don't want that, but I'm telling you, it's coming. It's coming. That's where these people, they're all on the same page. It's the same plan, the same design, and the same voltage being applied to the circuit. It's just that resistance. You are the variable as to whether this thing is going to be shut down or whether this tyranny is going to flow at a very high amperage. So, buying groceries and so on. You have this the spectrum that goes from gospel and worship down to your job, down to buying food, down to which restaurant you would go to on your anniversary. So just go to the restaurant that doesn't check IDs and enjoy your date. Fourth, the ethics of the thing are clear enough, meaning that you can be right with God and use a fake vaccine ID, but that doesn't mean that you should risk going to federal penitentiary in order to get your family to Disneyland. There are wisdom issues involved here. Fifth, if you are a Christian elder or pastor and you can't see your way clear to do this kind of thing, at least have the decency not to rat out Christians who do have that liberty in their conscience. In other words, don't even think about requiring vaccine IDs in order to come to a church. And do not dare to discipline one of your members who uses a fake ID in order to retain his ability to feed his family. You don't want to be the kind of pastor who would discipline a church member for using fake papers to get his family away from the Taliban. Sixth, don't be a chump, meaning you shouldn't have your cousin draw up a fake ID on the back of a napkin. Use only genuine fake IDs. Seventh, imagine yourself telling stories, this is the most important one. Imagine yourself telling stories to your great-grandchildren. Imagine this is past. And the true natures of what happened have become obvious. Behave in such a way that you'll not be ashamed to talk about it afterwards. And if we win this, make sure you have some good stories. We'll be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.
All right, and of course, coming out of Canada, Quebec, for example, they have their QR codes just like Australia. Speaking of fake agendas and fake passports, the QR code and the personal information it contains, they say, cannot be used without people's consent. That was a quote from the government. And so to show that that wasn't the case, you had some, and I would call them white hat hackers. You have black hats and you have white hats. We know who the good guys are, right? in that analogy. And so I would say white hat hackers hacked these politicians' devices and exposed the QR code information to show that it was open sieve. You know, one of the other things that came up, and there were a lot of comments in that post, as you can imagine, from Doug Wilson about fake vaccine IDs. And you had one individual, for example, well over 500 comments on that post. And one guy was very angry and taking on everyone and saying, you're going to kill people and all this. Now, think about that. Think about how many assumptions are based in that and what he is calling for. I mean, all the assumptions are that this is a deadly pandemic that everybody's going to die from. Well, even their own statistics don't show that. It also assumes that the vaccines are the solution. And, of course, we're going to talk about that some more again today. And, of course, that is not true either. The vaccines have been shown not to do anything in terms of health. First, we were told that the vaccines would reduce transmissibility, that people who had the shot would not transmit it. That, of course, was obviously nonsense. We all knew that. And then they eventually have now admitted that, yeah, they transmit it just like everybody else. And vaccinated people can get this respiratory illness and they can transmit it to other vaccinated people. And then we have what has not been widely admitted by the CDC and by the mainstream press, and that is the study that came out of Vietnam by Oxford Vaccine, Oxford University, the vaccine division. These are the people who created the AstraZeneca vaccine. AstraZeneca is a corporation that was put together with money from Bill Gates to profit off of this thing. But the people who developed the vaccine, those scientists did a test in Vietnam, very extensive test, and they showed, especially in the hospitals, with hospital workers, that when they examined the viral load on these hospital workers, they found that it was 251 times higher than unvaccinated people. I'll repeat that. 251 times higher for vaccinated people, the viral load is, than it is for unvaccinated. And these are the people who created the AstraZeneca vaccine. And so we've gone from get your vaccine so you don't transmit it to people to, well, it doesn't make any difference whether you're vaccinated or not transmitting it, to a situation where the people who are vaccinated are the super spreaders of whatever this is. So when this guy says, Doug, you're going to kill people, he's ignoring all of that. He's ignoring the safety issues of the vaccines. He's ignoring the efficacy issues of the vaccines. He's ignoring the political implications of a vaccine ID. And then finally, he's calling for censorship, because that's where this authoritarianism goes. Anybody who embraces a vaccine ID is going to embrace censorship as well, and vice versa. When we look at this, I've got a couple of other letters here from listeners. This is a reminder, and I think I talked about this last week, but I can't be sure. Even if I did, it bears repeating, because I know that everybody doesn't get every show, and they don't listen to every minute of every show. And this is something you'll find on sanitize.com. That's spelled S-A-N-O-T-I-Z-E. There was a story. I know I had it. I don't know if I got to it or not on the show for sure. But anyway, I'll give it to you again because it's very important. It's an antimicrobial nasal spray that has a 99% efficacy rate in phase 2 trials and is getting no media attention, obviously. Why? Because it is not something they can make a lot of money from. I was hoping you could use your platform to garner some support for this novel therapeutic that uses nitric oxide, to naturally take out the SARS-CoV-2 and many other ailments that have plagued humans for many years. You'll find that at sanotize.com. They're not a sponsor. I'm not getting paid for this. It's just a public service announcement. There are things, believe it or not, there are very effective medicines outside the most expensive patented medicines, because this is a financially incentivized situation of medical malpractice that we're involved in right now. Another listener, this is a subscriber, Cowboy Tom. He says, the church thing is good advice. Says, we're trying to find a place with good internet, hoping to make an offer within the next week or so we can move there. And he said, thanks for having Jason on. This is on Friday. And again, that's Jason Goodman. He said, I follow him pretty closely, and he's doing some good work covering the New York City protests. We'll be talking about that coming up. And nothing as big as France. But it was good, I think, that people showed up. And we'll talk about whether or not protesting is a good thing or productive activity to engage in. New American makes some points that I have always in the past agreed with, that protests were counterproductive. It's why I was never big on doing these bullhorn stuff with Alex and stuff. I don't feel like it's productive except to draw attention to the person with the bullhorn. And it has a lot of downside issues as well. And I think that rather than doing these organized protests, my preferred thing to do is to live your life. Let me tell you, you know, when you've got John MacArthur's church in L.A., 7,000 to 8,000 people meeting there every week without obeying any of these arbitrary, ineffective, now we know they're ineffective, dictates. That is a protest, if you will. I mean, it's not designed as a protest. Their purpose is other. And that's what makes it more powerful. They're not there as a direct challenge to authority. But their very presence and the fact that they've been able to do this for over a year now without any of the dire consequences that have been predicted by our medical emperors shows that the medical emperors have no clothes, they have no science, they have no data, and they also have no authority to do the things that they're doing. So that's my preferred protest, to organize that way. But let's take a quick look at Afghanistan. Still in the news, obviously, because of what happened with the tragedy of 13 soldiers being unnecessarily killed there. One of the mothers of one of the soldiers called into a talk show. She called into this is a Sirius Patriot Radio, a conservative talk radio channel, with a radio host, Andrew Wilkow. We used to be on Patriot Radio. I mean, Sirius FM. And we got taken off when the CEO came out as a tranny. I wonder why that happened. I guess if you dance between the lines there and you don't directly challenge the transgender people, you can stay on Sirius radio. I have no interest in being there. I have no interest in being on a platform controlled by a transgender CEO pushing this stuff. It'd be a useless exercise. Even if I were to get on there, I would immediately get thrown off because I'm not going to bow to that. But this is what a mother of one of the Marines killed called into this show with Andrew Wilkow.
Kathy, Colorado, you're on the Wilkow Majority. Hello.
Hey, my son was one of the Marines that died yesterday.
Your
and to
son?
Listen to that. Sorry, I'm on the radio.
No. Go
my
ahead.
My son was one of the Marines that died yesterday. 20 years and 6 months old, getting ready to come home from frickin' Jordan to be with his wife to watch the birth of his son. And that feckless, dementia-ridden piece of crap just sent my son to die. I woke up at 4 o'clock this morning to Marines at my door telling me my son was dead. So to have her on right before me and listen to that piece of crap talk about diplomatic crap with freaking Taliban terrorists who just freaking blew up my son and know nothing, to not say anything about, oh my God, I'm so sorry for the families. So my son is gone. And I just want all you Democrats who cheated in the election or who voted for him legitimately, you just killed my son with a dementia-ridden piece of crap who doesn't even know he's in the White House. He still thinks he's a senator. So I'm going to try and calm down. I'm sorry.
No, you look, I take this call with
two Marines showed up at my house at 4 o'clock in the morning to tell me my son was dead. So, my name is Kathy McCollum. My son was Riley James McCollum. You can check it out. His wife, she might not want me to say her name. They just got married on February 14th, and they're expecting a baby on September 26th. And I just couldn't sit by idly because I think I need to just process through anger instead of tears. And so this is how I'm going to do it. And Laura Boebert's coming to my house tomorrow. My representative will be at my house tomorrow. And we'll speak, and hopefully she'll be able to convey my message to the rest of the United States that this was, she said, your son did not die in vain. But guess what? My son did die in vain. This was an unnecessary debacle that could have been handled properly. They had months and months to remove everyone from Afghanistan, and they chose not to. And so they sent in freaking, 6,000 troops? And my son, through the laws of statistics, my son was one of the ones who just got blown up in a freaking terrorist bomb yesterday. So.
Yeah, and that's his mother. That's Kathy McCollum, mother of 20-year-old Lance Corporal Riley James McCollum. Biden paid tribute to the 13 American troops killed in Kabul on Sunday. He stood in solemn silence, writes the Daily Mail. Yeah, he stands in solemn silence much of the time. As their bodies returned to U.S. soil in Dover, Delaware, but later he visited FEMA headquarters in Washington, D.C. For a briefing on the hurricane. And this is what happened.
Commissioner, I really think it all works. I'm not supposed to take any questions, but go ahead.
Mr. President, on Afghanistan.
I'm not going to answer Afghanistan now.
Can you say if there's still an acute risk?
Yeah, look at that. See, I'm not supposed to take any questions.
President Biden there at FEMA headquarters.
So who told him that? I've been told, here's my list, and I've been told that I've got to call this person first and so forth. Yeah, who's giving him the orders? Yeah, feckless, dementia-ridden Biden. So I've been told not to, but I'll answer, oh, no, I'm not going to answer that. And then he walks off again. Maybe you've seen the meme joke. This is President Biden's presidential portrait, and it's a picture of him his back as he's walking off, because that's what we see so many times now. The COVID vaccine program has killed more young active duty people than COVID did, actually, though. You know, more than the Taliban or ISIS, whoever these people were. Let's just remember that, because we're going to talk about coming up, not in this particular segment, but coming up, we're going to talk about the vaccine mandates that they're putting on the military as well. This, again, is Dr. Lee Merritt. I interviewed her at length, not last week, but I think the week before. An excellent interview. You should hear what she has to say. She was a Navy physician for 9 years. She was a Navy physician and surgeon. She completed orthopedic surgery residency in the U.S. Navy. She's had a private practice of orthopedic and spinal surgery since 1995. But in her capacity, being trained and serving in the military as a doctor, she had this to say.
And, you know, one of my big problems is our vaccination of the military. I'm a 10-year Navy surgeon, and so I have Navy people and Army people calling me. There were only 20 deaths of all the active duty in 2020 for COVID. 20, and all the services put together. They have a big, now that they didn't have when I was in, they have a big epidemiologic base, and they can find out exactly what's going on. There were only 20 deaths. We're vaccinating everybody. And we've already had tumors, and we've had 80 cases of myocarditis, which I'm going to get to. But myocarditis has a significant mortality, five-year mortality rate. I think it's 66%. So we, with the vaccine program, have ostensibly killed more of our young active duty people than COVID did. Leukemia, another blood dyscrasia, cancer. There's 48 per year on average in VAERS. We now are up to 229. Myocarditis that I just mentioned. In 31 years of the VAERS, there were 317 cases. Now, this year, 1,113. So you can see the ongoing numbers. And I can pick almost any diagnosis, and you will find the same issues. So the question you have to ask is, why are we not stopping this? We stopped many things for far less. We stopped working on respiratory syncytial virus vaccine because of 22 deaths of infants in the hospital. We stopped the H1N1 after 53 deaths or 53 serious adverse events. So we are now doing 53 probably a day. Why are we continuing to move on here? Well, in my opinion, I think you have to look at your worldview. And this is my new thing. When I talk to people, I say, if you think we're fighting a virus, you're going to act like a victim. If you think we're fighting a war, you're going to act like a warrior. And my argument is, we're in a war. Now, we have to determine, it's a fifth generation, uncharacteristic, unrestricted war, but we have to determine who the enemy is.
That's right. Exactly right. And she's exactly right in terms of the number of people who are dying, according to the VAERS reports. That would be almost 60. She said, you know, over 50 people a day. It's almost 60 if you work it out. And as I pointed out last week, if you look at the number of people injured, that's about 7,100 people a day injured with these vaccines. And yet we won't stop, even though in the past we have stopped various vaccine programs, swine flu or RSV vaccines. We stopped those with only 22 people dead, with only 53 people dead. And I understand how they try to cover this up. I understand they say, well, anybody can file a report in VAERS. And so some of the people have, in order to discredit the CDC's VAERS database, some people have filed some parody reports in there. But let me ask you, if you've got 13,000 of these, do you think that it's likely that you got 22 people who died or 50 people who died? Or maybe, you know, we had with the 737 MAX, I like to point that out, we had 500 people died. We stopped that, didn't we? How many people flew planes? They were flying those planes all over the world. You had airlines that bought those 737 MAXs. There were only two crashes. So you got probably millions of people who took flights, and only 500 people died, and they shut that down. And they've shut down vaccines in the past for 22 deaths, for 53 deaths. You don't think out of 13,000 reported deaths that there's legitimately 22, 53? As she pointed out, in the military, they've had 20 people who died with a positive COVID test. That doesn't necessarily mean that they died with COVID. But let's just say that they died from it. Let's just say that they did die from it. That's 20 people. Already more than died in this tragedy in Afghanistan. And now they want to extend this to a lot of people who have medical issues that would not indicate that they should be vaccinated in the military. They don't care about that. They don't care about the soldiers and the sailors' lives and the airmen and the Marines. They don't care about their lives with the vaccines any more than they cared about their lives at the airbase, at the airfield. It's not a base. And so when you look at it, as you point out, myocarditis, other doctors have said that is a serious disease. Life expectancy after you've had a serious heart issue with myocarditis is on average about 5 years. And they've had 80 cases of that. And she goes down the whole list of different things from leukemia that have jumped from 48 to 229 in the database associated with the vaccines. With the vaccine program, she said, we were ostensibly killing more of our young active duty people than COVID did. And this article from Vaccine Impact points out that's already happened with the Gulf War. We had the experimental anthrax vaccine, which by some estimates claimed 35,000 military people got what was called Gulf War syndrome. Was it that? Was it other things that they were exposed to? Was it a combination of those things? I produced a video that includes my Army wife of an active duty soldier, includes an Army wife of an active duty soldier in South Korea, explaining how her previously healthy husband now has major health problems after taking the Trump shots, followed by a medic whistleblower who explains what lengths the military will go to cover up deaths related to experimental vaccines. That's from Vaccine Impact. But let's get back to Afghanistan before we get further into that. You've heard the tragic call of that mother into the Sirius FM radio show. This is a father of one of the Marines who died. And he was contacted by a local reporter for Fox News, U.S. Marine Jared Schmidt, 20 years old, one of the 13 service members killed in the attacks. His father, Mark Schmitz, told Fox 2 News when a local reporter talked to him. He said, the reporter said, to all Americans who have been devastated right along with you, what is your message to us? And the father said he warned that Americans should be concerned about the nation's leadership. He said, be afraid of our leadership or our lack thereof. Pray every day for the soldiers that are putting their lives at risk and doing what they love, which is protecting all of us. I think they're the only ones that we can honestly say have our backs. And those are the ones who are being pushed out. Those are the ones who are being pushed out of the military. So when you look at this, I had a conversation yesterday with a friend at church, an ex-Marine. And he said he's been trying to get Ted Cruz. He's written stuff to other news media. The question is, as an ex-Marine, and he said he's been out since 2010. He said, we had procedures. He said, we were trained. Even back in 2010, we were trained to be able to spot snipers. That's a key part of the training, especially if you're in suicide bombers. We were trained to spot suicide bombers, and that was back in 2010. All Marines go through that training as part of their job of guarding these types of situations. So he said, why did nobody take a shot at these people? Have the rules of engagement been changed? Not the training, but the rules of engagement. And I told him, I think probably that is the case. Because when you look at the history that we've seen from the Obama administration, from Hillary Clinton at Benghazi, they were more concerned about optics, weren't they, than the lives of soldiers or even the people in the embassies. They were far more concerned about the optics. They didn't want to be seen going in there with a big force. And I've talked to at least two of the soldiers who were there in that Benghazi thing, and that's exactly, they were on the phone with these people for the longest time. They had people in the military say, come on, we can get there. I don't want to go in with a big show of force. And I think that's what we're seeing again now. I mean, we're certainly seeing in terms of we do not want to damage our diplomatic relationship with the Taliban. That's what that mother was so upset about. So you have that piece of crap on Biden talking about how important it was that they maintain diplomatic relations with the Taliban. They do not want to offend the Taliban. It's created friction, as I pointed out last week, between the U.S. and the U.K. because the U.K. wanted to go out and rescue people, and the American leadership did not want to. The soldiers, American soldiers wanted to, but the American leadership did not want them to. They don't want the optics of that. They don't want to offend the Taliban. And, of course, we've seen this throughout the entire U.S. occupation, where they would punish soldiers with Bibles, tell them that they had to be quiet, while they enabled a regime that was the second worst persecutor of Christians, and not just Christians, every other religion, in the world. That was our regime that we put in. Our regime, second worst persecutor of religious persecutor. And I don't mean kicking you off of social media, taking your job. I mean cutting people's heads off. Yeah, we were okay with that. And they're turning Christians away left and right now at the gates there as well. So it's the rules of engagement. That's right. What are the rules of engagement? As Biden told, as you channeled this down through the military leadership, these soldiers who have been trained to spot suicide bombers, you will not shoot to kill. That's always been the policy. That should be the policy of a suicide bomber, you shoot to kill. Have they been told not to do that because of the optics, just like Benghazi? So you have a Marine commander, as I alluded to earlier, the one who is not the Army sergeant who wants to be Ellen DeGeneres. Not her. Not the LGBT woke sergeant saying, hey, we have martial law. Yeah, none of this stuff applies. And when I point my gun, I'm pointing it right at you, not at somebody else. No, she didn't get fired or disciplined for any of that. That's on point. She's on message from the Pentagon. They want you to hear that kind of stuff. No, the guy that they immediately took out is a Marine who said, and again, I'm looking for his name here. Scheller is his name. And Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Scheller. On Friday, he said, I'm willing to throw all this away to say this to my senior leaders. Because he'd worked for 17 years in the Marines. He says, I demand accountability. He said in a Facebook post that went viral this weekend. He shredded the ineptitude of the military's top leadership, even questioning the entirety of the botched withdrawal and evacuation effort. He said, Americans have died in vain over the course of the whole two-decade-long war. He says, I'm not saying we've got to be in Afghanistan forever, but I am saying, did any of you throw your rank on the table and say, hey, it's a bad idea to evacuate Bagram Airfield, a strategic air base, before we evacuate everyone, he said. Did anyone say that? And when you didn't think to do that, did anyone raise their hand and say, we completely messed this up? No, everybody's pointing the finger at somebody else. He said, I've been in the Marine infantry for 17 years. I started with a tour, started my tour with Victor 1-8. That's the current unit that's doing perimeter security, dealing with the mess that's going on there, he said in the video. And he was promptly fired. So he said, to all my friends across social media, I've been relieved for cause based on a lack of trust and confidence as of 14:30 today. He says, my chain of command is doing exactly what I would do if I were in their shoes. And again, he says, I'm going to put up my 17 years. And remember, this is pretty important. He's 3 years away from retiring at 20 years. That's a big deal. And he's probably going to get a dishonorable discharge. That's an even bigger deal. Not just going to miss his retirement. But he put all that on the line because of this criminal incompetence that is on display here. He said, I'll not be making any statements other than what's on my social platforms until I exit the Marine Corps. He said, we have a Secretary of Defense that testified to Congress in May that the Afghan National Security Forces could withstand the Taliban advance. He said, we have a chairman of the Joint Chiefs, who the commandant is a member of that, who's supposed to advise on military policy. In other words, the commandant, the head Marine, is a part of the Joint Chiefs, right? So where's our leader in the Marines? Why didn't he say anything? Why didn't he put his rank on the line? for this policy that was going to result in abject failure? Well, he knows, and you know. He says, we have a Marine combatant, a commander. All of these people are supposed to advise. But instead, they're bureaucrats. They care more about their career than they do about the lives of their soldiers. They care more about their career than they do winning a war. They care more about their career than they do defending the Constitution they swore to uphold. And these are the people who will be commanding the military if this Cold War, this cold Civil War, becomes a hot war. So, yeah, ours is not the reason why. Ours is but to do or die, right? You just follow this dementia-ridden commander and the LGBT Pentagon bureaucrats. Who abandoned the Bagram Air Base? Well, it turns out, as Biden was throwing his Pentagon generals under the bus, they had a few things to say as well. Biden said that the Pentagon, concluded, the military, he said, that Bagram was not much of a value added, really, that it was much wiser to focus on Kabul. And so I followed that recommendation. What Biden neglected to mention is that the president sets the constraints under which the military draws up plans and evaluates options. Mark Milley, who is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, said about Bagram, he said it, quote, took a significant level of military effort, and our task given to us at that time, our task was to protect the embassy in order for the embassy personnel to continue to function. As a result, he added, we had to collapse one or the other. He doesn't know, or he doesn't have the guts to stand up and say that's the wrong policy. That's an open question. I don't know if he's an idiot or a traitor. That's an open question with Mark Milley, isn't it? Like so many of these other people. That mission of withdrawal was Biden's bad call, and his generals sought to make it work. Milley told Congress back in June, Bagram was not necessary. That's a flat-out lie. We know that now. It was not necessary tactically or operationally for what we're going to try to do here in Afghanistan. Consolidate on Kabul in support of their government. Well, obviously, the Afghans didn't get the support they needed the way U.S. forces quietly slipped out of Bagram in the dead of night. Which is, and I read that too, that was, they got their battle plans from a satire piece on The Onion 10 years earlier. 2011, I think it was. 10 or 11. You know, U.S. tiptoes out at night, doesn't tell anybody it's going. I mean, that's, when you go to The Onion for your battle plans, that's what Mark Milley does. So U.S. forces quietly slipped out. And, of course, it was demoralizing for the Afghan army. I mean, I reported it at the time. You know, these guys are saying, wait a minute. They lost all the goodwill they had here in 20 years, but they also realized these people didn't have their backs. So they were going to be thrown to the wolves. And that escalated the desertion rate of the Afghan military. They started heading for the borders right there. Tajikistan put several thousand troops on the border to keep that mass exodus of Afghan troops from running into their country. But it was pretty clear at that point in time they were not going to get any support from the Americans, that they were just going to turn their backs on them. So the Associated Press spoke to soldiers wandering through the base the next day that said, you know, they've given up all the goodwill. By leaving the way they did at night without telling Afghan soldiers who were outside patrolling the area. If the U.S. is abandoning its prized air base, then it was bugging out altogether. There's nobody with our back. I did a video on that at the time called the Bagram Bug Out. After the collapse of the Afghan government, Mr. Biden could have sent in enough U.S. troops to retake Bagram and to provide for a safer evacuation, but he declined that option as well. So we see that some veterans put together some ad hoc things to do that the Pentagon certainly could have. The Pentagon has the capabilities. Not that they don't have the capability. They don't have the will. They don't want to offend the Taliban and so forth. But you did have some U.S. Special Ops veterans said, we did what we should do. This was reported on Friday by ABC News. Moving after nightfall, In a near pitch-black darkness, extremely dangerous conditions, the group said it worked unofficially in tandem with the U.S. military and U.S. Embassy to move people, sometimes one person at a time or in pairs, but rarely more than a small bunch, inside the wire of the U.S. military control side of the Hamid Karzai International Airport. They brought in approximately 500 Afghan special operators, assets, enablers, and their family members into Kabul's airport overnight, placed them in the protective custody of the U.S. military. The amount added to over 130 others who have been smuggled in the past 10 days. So in 10 days, they'd only gotten 130 people. These guys got in 500. Again, it's the lack of will. The lack of will. Former Marine said he helped to evacuate thousands in Afghanistan, and then the U.S. military told them to stop. Daily Caller, this is another group. Former Force Recon Marine Chad Robichaud told the Daily Caller about his organization helping his Afghan interpreter Aziz, his family, nearly 5,300 others escape from Afghanistan. But then when Biden and his woke people get wind of it, they tell them to stop. As Biden approached Afghan allies, retired U.S. Special Ops hatched what they called Operation Pineapple Express to rescue people from the slaughter of the Taliban. As the Taliban is putting out, you know, on Twitter, pictures of them beheading hostages. No problem, right? But just don't put anything out about January the 6th on Twitter. An all-volunteer group of American badasses conducted a week-long mission on the streets of Kabul, writes Zero Hedge, under the cover of darkness, which resulted in the rescue of more than 600. Comprised of American veterans and ad hoc groups of current and former U.S. special operators, intelligence officers, aid workers, and others experienced in the field, Operation Pineapple Express, highly coordinated week-long effort to run dozens of covert missions throughout Taliban-controlled Kabul. One member of Task Force Pineapple, combat-wounded former Navy SEAL Jason Redmond, said with deep frustration, "Our own government didn't do this, but we did what we should do as Americans." The mission, led by retired Green Beret Commander Colonel Scott Mann, was coordinated in an encrypted chat room. On Wednesday, over 50 people were online to conduct dozens of covert missions, which Mann described as a night filled with Jason Bourne-type scenes every 10 minutes. The small groups of Afghans repeatedly encountered Taliban foot soldiers who they said beat them, but would never check identity papers that might have revealed them as operators who spent two decades killing Taliban leadership. All of them carried U.S. visas, pending visa applications, or new applications prepared by members of the Task Force Pineapple. Another part of the group, led by former Green Beret Captain Zach Lois, known as the Underground Railroads Engineer. The Afghan operators were known as passengers, and they were being guided by shepherds. We have Mike McCall, Republican congressman from here in Texas, says the number of Americans in Afghanistan is higher than the Biden administration says, and we cannot get them all out by August the 31st, especially if you don't want to go looking for them. You just make your way there. Oh, wait. Go away from the gates now. Oh, maybe you can come back. Wait and shelter in place until you hear from the U.S. Embassy. State Department is no longer allowing American citizens to enter Kabul Airport, says Representative Ronnie Jackson of Texas. He tweeted that last night. Said the State Department was not helping American citizens trying to evacuate. He says, "I am furious. My team has been on the phone all day trying to get American citizens out. They have just been outside the airport numerous times, but the State Department will not help them. They've been beaten by the Taliban at checkpoints, told to leave and come back with large sums of money. Biden is going to get them killed. Enough. We have to put in someone who gives a damn in charge right now." Another Republican, Mike Waltz, also tweeted, "U.S. citizens are not being allowed into the Kabul airport." And again, when I look at this, yes, they're right. And yes, they should be speaking up. And I'm not criticizing them for speaking up about this. I'm criticizing them for not speaking up during the entire last year. Have you seen any stuff like this coming from any Republicans? Are they speaking out like this against the vaccines, against the vaccine mandates? Are they speaking out against the massive indebtedness that is going to bankrupt our country? No. They're absolutely silent on all of this stuff. And again, you know, that was the issue that I had about the, all the stuff that stopped the steal. Why would you care about a politician who allowed all that stuff and participated in putting all that lockdown on us? He is clearly not the solution. He is the problem. But again, this is horrific. It shows the corruption and the hubris and the detachment of our government from American citizens, from its own military, how they despise us, and yet it's just a small tip of the iceberg compared to this lockdown and this global vaccine program. Biden vows to finish the Kabul evacuation, and he's going to execute some terrorists, he says. He's going to get his revenge, yeah. Well, and of course, you're going to see, we did a drone strike, or I had one, we took out some people on a tricycle and killed a lot of innocent bystanders as well. Do we know? We have their word for it that that was at least one of those people that they killed was a terrorist, they say. Meanwhile, the U.S. is handing out blank copies of visas in Afghanistan, says an ex-FBI agent who tracked counterterrorism cases. He warned that terrorists in Afghanistan stand a high chance of being able to walk right into a U.S.-bound plane as a result of the Biden administration's dissemination of blank visa papers. And again, it was a combination. I started talking about these vaccine passports because you saw the pieces of paper that they said they put out a press release. And that was ominous and a harbinger of what was to come, in my opinion. Because at the same time, they put out this statement talking about these counterfeit vaccine passport papers. Said, yeah, look, these are printed up in China and shipped in. And we intercepted them by, you know, Federal Express in Memphis, Tennessee, and so forth. And I said, oh, really? Well, you know, that tells you a couple of things. They're preparing you for this, trying to intimidate you for this. And yet, you know, look at how, and they caught one individual with some of them, gave them a tremendous penalty. Tremendous penalty. Disproportionate, I believe. And should have been prohibited by the Eighth Amendment. But nevertheless, that was done as a warning shot to people. And at the same time, they're handing out blank copies of visas to terrorists in Afghanistan. Kind of like the way that they allow people to come in across the border. Don't test them. Don't inject them. Put them on planes without masks and fly them everywhere while they tell the rest of the people, even people coming from Europe, you can't come in if you're not vaccinated. So, blank papers. What do you think happened when these people received a document like that, that has no name? Says the an American, David Fox, an American trapped in Afghanistan's capital, Kabul. He said last year he got a look-alike visa paper from the State Department. He says this same paper was sent to thousands of others. It's kind of like the mail-in election, right? Which, again, is not like a mail-in election that we've had before. This is sending out ballots to everybody, whether you said you needed one or not. And people getting ballots from multiple jurisdictions. And so he said, yeah, they're just mailing these things out by the thousands. It's not. This is not a speculation. They've already done this. They printed out over 1,000 copies, he said. You've got tens of thousands of Afghans who now have this kind of ridiculous, bogus document that the State Department created. When you provide blank visas without specific names already on them and without going through the vetting process, don't be surprised when you end up with ISIS or with Al-Qaeda showing up with those visas in hand. And, of course, they are flying terrorists out. At least 100 of these, it was reported before, they've discovered. But how many more have they not discovered coming out? One commentator said, this is Tucker Carlson who said this. The truth is, despite what they're telling you, we have no real idea who they are. We just learned, for example, that at least 100 of the refugees the American military has flown out of Kabul, people what we've been told repeatedly are heroes by definition, are in fact on terror watch lists. One man we evacuated apparently has worked directly for ISIS. Today, an Afghan interpreter told Fox News that this sort of thing is happening all the time. People are getting on planes in Kabul without any proof of identification whatsoever. It's like voting in California. It is exactly like, you know, just send out the blank ballots or send out the blank visas to people. But in the early days, they were not even checking for any identification. Meanwhile, the Biden White House and State Department are blocking the rescue of Christians from Afghanistan. This is Glenn Beck, somebody I'm not a fan of, but he quickly raised $30 million to charter planes to airlift Christians. That's good. So then the Biden administration blocks it. He said, the State Department has blocked us every step of the way. The State Department and the White House have been the biggest problem. Everyone else has been working together, putting aside differences, trying to get these people to safety. But the State Department and the White House have blocked us every step of the way. And again, they were partners with an administration, not the Taliban, but the Afghan administration that we put in power, partners with him. We had the second only to North Korea in terms of Christian persecution. So Christians there are marked out not just for death, but to be burned alive. I have pictures of them pleading to get back through the gate, said Beck. I have pictures of blood and body parts. There's nothing but death in that area. At the State Department, Anthony Blinken, this Blinken official, claims the U.S. never gave the Taliban lists of names, but then he details the names that the U.S. gave the Taliban. Article from the Daily Caller. On Meet the Press yesterday, he told NBC's Chuck Todd he disputed the accuracy of reports indicating that U.S. officials had handed over lists of people that the Taliban should allow through checkpoints and into the airport at Kabul, and then just moments later, he appeared to concede that U.S. officials had handed over passenger manifests for busloads of Afghan allies who were supposed to be allowed through security. Chuck Todd said, I want to ask you about that idea that some of these lists of people you're trying to get out of the country that you've given to the Taliban. And he says, Chuck, that is simply not the case. The idea that we've done anything to put further risk those that were trying to help leave the country is simply wrong. Yeah. But then he went on to detail the lists of people that the U.S. officials had given to the Taliban. He said, when you're trying to get a bus or a group of people through and you need to show a manifest to do that, particularly in cases where people don't have the necessary credentials on them or documents on them, then you'll share the names of the list of people on the bus so they can be assured those people are people we're looking to bring in. And that's what happened, he said. We're not going to go out and get the people that we know are out there. We know enough about them that we'll put their name on a list, but we're not going to go get them. Instead, we're going to give the names to the Taliban, and then we'll tell them, by the way, you know, we'd appreciate it if you chaps would allow these Americans and these Afghan collaborators with us to come through when you see them. Oh, yes, we will do whatever you say. But by the way, don't let any Christians through. State Department warns U.S. citizens to leave the gates of Kabul Airport immediately. That's right. Get away. It's a threat, and we're not going to do anything to protect it. We will not have, and I think this is true, I think they've changed the rules of engagement. The Marines trained to spot suicide bombers and take them out. No. So they don't know. They really don't know. They really haven't been trained, or they've been told you can't do that. The Kabul attack is Biden's worst nightmare, says Obama's ex-defense secretary and former CIA chief, Lying Panetta. Oh, Leon Panetta, but I call him Lying Panetta. Lying Panetta now says we're going to have to go back to Afghanistan. Was this the long game all along for the warmongers? I said that, by the way, when Biden extended it from May, and I questioned at the time when that was done. I said, why? If the military situation is untenable, and it is, and some people anonymously told Rand Paul that it was, and he was pointing out that there was no military solution in Afghanistan. So if that was the case, and if they're going to make an agreement with the Taliban to get out by May, why didn't they go ahead and do it? And then once Biden gets in, he says, no, it's not going to be May. We're going to wait till the 20th anniversary of 9/11, and then we'll pull them out. And I said at the time, I said, I smell a rat here. I think he's trying to annoy the Taliban and provoke an attack. So it gives him a chance to go back in and escalate things. And that may be what is happening here, as we see Lying Panetta saying that Biden will have to go back in to avenge the deaths. I understand. I said that, you know, they're going to invite attacks and, you know, create a situation where we're weak and, you know, they draw it down, put us in a vulnerable situation, then troops are killed, and then we'll go back in just like CIA and Defense Secretary Lying Panetta said. I understand we're trying to get our troops out of there, but the bottom line is we can leave a battlefield, but we can't leave the war on terrorism, which is still a threat to our security. You know, I had high hopes for Jeff Sessions because he got into, well, kind of. I criticized Sessions because he was kind of weak in his response to Lying Panetta. I'll never forget, and I've played it many, many times. I'm not going to play it now, but it was Lying Panetta, who, as defense secretary, was being questioned by then-Senator Jeff Sessions. And Sessions was saying, well, you aren't going to add troops to Iraq without telling us, are you? I mean, we're supposed to vote on that and decide about that in the Senate. And he says, Lying Panetta says, well, Senator, we'll consult with our allies and the UN and NATO, and we'll inform you what we decide to do. Well, you are a U.S. congressman once upon a time. You know what the Constitution says. You know you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to get our permission. Well, as I said, Senator, we will consult with our allies at the UN and at NATO, and we will let you know what we're going to do. And it was like, Jeff Sessions was just like, golly, just like Gomer Pyle or something. And I was like, call this guy out for what he is, you know. And, of course, he didn't, but anyway. So Lion Panetta says, we're probably going to have to go back in when Al-Qaeda resurrects itself, as they will. I understand that we're trying to get our troops out of there, but the bottom line is we can leave a battlefield, but we can't leave the war on terror. So we need a fresh, new military occupation of Afghanistan, says the former CIA director. We will be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Looking for better information? APSRadioNews.com features articles and commentary, along with audio from all the top news from around the world. APSRadioNews.com.
This has gotta stop. This is a song by Eric Clapton. It's got some great graphics as well. If you haven't seen this, we're gonna let this run through to get the lyrics a little bit, but I want you to see the graphics as well.
But this has gotta stop. Enough is enough. I can't take this BS any longer. It's gone far enough. You wanna claim my soul? You'll have to come and break down this door. I knew that something was going on wrong when you started laying down the law. I can't move my hands, I break out in sweat. I wanna cry, can't take it anymore. But this has gotta stop, enough is enough. I can't take this BS any longer. It's gone far enough. You wanna claim my soul? You'll have to come and break down this door. I've been around a long, long time. seen it all, and I'm used to being free. I know who I am, try to do what's right, so lock me up and throw away the key. But this has gotta stop, enough is enough. I can't take this BS any longer, it's gone far enough.
All right, let's talk a little bit about freedom issues. And, of course, Eric Clapton knows all about it. He was goaded into taking not one but two shots, and he had bad reactions with both of them, even worse reactions after the second one. And he has been very active, along with Van Morrison, in terms of pushing back against the lockdown. Folks, whatever is happening here, you do understand, of course, that no matter what you think about this pandemic or the virus or the vaccines, you understand that the masks, the lockdowns, the vaccines have been a total failure. And yet they press on because this is about taking our freedom. This is not about medicine. It's not about science. The vaccines do not prevent you from getting sick again. They don't prevent you from dying. They actually, as we have seen from Oxford University, they actually have a 251 times viral load in a very large study that Oxford did out of Vietnam, 251 times the viral load of people who are not vaccinated. So that in terms of transmission, it actually makes things worse. And, of course, we have seen all of the safety issues involved with this. But if the masks and the lockdowns had worked, we wouldn't be where we are right now. And, of course, we can see that they're not working as far as the vaccines go. But, nevertheless, they continue to take more and more freedom from us, to give themselves more and more power and control. Just speaking the magic words, abracadabra. Oh, no, that's not it. Pandemic is a pandemic, and you're all going to die. That's the magic words this time around. Might as well be abracadabra. This total nonsense. By the way, I want to thank clutterpop.com, its news aggregator. Thank them for putting the show up last week at the top of the website. Appreciate that. Clutterpop.com, if you want to find some real news. Over the weekend, I saw this thing from Mitt Romney saying that your freedoms, your liberty threatens my health. So I retweeted that, and this is what I had to say. The vexed. Some of them are double vexed, soon triple vexed, but they will never be at peace with themselves or with others. Mitt Romney is free to imprison himself, to inject himself, to indulge in his OCD paranoia. But this oath breaker does not have the authority to remove my informed consent. And boy, did that get, I only had like 94 retweets, but I got 102. Pretty much, there were a couple of people who agreed with me, but for the most part, most people were eagerly anticipating the day that I was going to die from COVID. Well, keep wishing. I didn't do anything last year. I didn't go through any of the rituals at all anywhere last year. Still not interested in doing that. But I was absolutely amazed at the pushback. Some people were saying things like, Mitt Romney is absolutely right here. Herd immunity depends on 70-80% of a population getting vaccinated. Romney is to be commended on conserving the body politic and criticizing crank libertarians. You do live in a society. Well, a social contract is something in which I cannot find my signature. But I do recall Mitt Romney taking an oath to support that constitution. So if you want to know where this is headed, again, as I point out, vaccinated Australians are going to be granted a new freedom. They will get 1 hour of recreation, which will, you know, be added to their 1 hour to exercise outdoors. So, you know, each day you can get out 1 hour. Isn't that nice? Do you want to live in a society like that? Because that is the plan for all of us. In New York, we had thousands of people who flooded the streets of New York City to protest the vaccine mandate. Over 1,000 people. I don't know how many there are, but of course, this is coming from the Daily Mail, and they're going to downplay the numbers. It's not as many people as it took to the streets in London to protest, and that did have an effect. That got the attention of Bojo, and Bojo said, all right, we'll have Freedom Day. It's coming up July 19th, and then on Freedom Day, he told them that they were going to have vaccine mandates coming for everybody. A furious crowd forces Justin Trudeau to cancel his campaign event. I Need Freedom, read one sign held by a protester in Ontario on Friday, while others repeatedly screamed, F Trudeau. And people were seen waving their middle fingers at the prime minister. I was thrown in jail and into a mental institution and then deported from Singapore for not wearing a COVID-19 mask, writes Chris Sweeney on RT. He is an author and a columnist who has written for newspapers such as The Times, Daily Express, The Sun, and Daily Record. He says, you don't like wearing masks? Well, neither does Benjamin Glenn. His refusal to wear one on account of his failure to accept Singapore's right to make them legally mandatory saw him treated like a terrorist. Yeah, exactly. The return leg of Benjamin Glenn's daily commute turned his life upside down. Violent arrests, a prison sentence, and time in a mental institution followed. But he vowed and said, I would do it all again, and I don't regret anything. Living in Singapore, the Brit and his partner decided to return home with their two kids, booking a flight May 31st. On Keen Runner, Glenn's final day at work, he went for a run and with his colleagues, followed by a few drinks. And on the train home, a passenger videotaped him not wearing a COVID mask, contrary to local rules. See, it's the snitches that turn you in. 24 hours later, the police knocked on his door, demanding to come to the station. I was happy to have a chat with him. I thought, this will just be a conversation. I could go talk to them on Monday, but they insisted that they had to take me then. I objected to that, as it was so late. It was my daughter's 5th birthday, but that's when the nightmare began. Things got ugly. Officers used batons, which led to an ambulance having to be called because of him bleeding from the knees, the elbows, and the shoulders. Bleeding from the shoulders. He spent the rest of the weekend in holding cells, which he described as horrendous. There was a concrete floor, no bedding, and the lights were on constantly. Tiredness had him hallucinating before he was finally granted bail. The rest of the family flew to the UK, but he had to remain for a scheduled court date, and worse was to follow. He explained, on July 19th, five of them, police, came bursting into my room. I hid in the bathroom, recorded it on my phone. They gave me no choice, and they dragged me out. At this point, things turned quite dark. Bail was revoked, and he was back in concrete police cells and then transferred to Changi Prison. He said, I'm probably the only person in the history of Singapore who is happy about going to prison. I thought, it can't be any worse, but I still had no bed, and it was a thin bamboo mat on the floor and an itchy blanket. He said, I admitted the whole time that it was me not wearing a mask. My defense was based on the law, and who has jurisdiction over who? Is it a criminal action, or it is a civil regulation breach? They weren't happy with that, so ultimately they put him into a mental institution, because this is where we're headed, folks. In the Soviet Union, if you question the arbitrary, absolute, and total power of the government, you are by definition insane. And political opponents would be put into mental institutions. So let's take a look at the censorship this year. We had Twitter. The Twitterverse was celebrating the purging of Alex Berenson, a former New York Times science reporter who has been doing science and talking about this stuff. And so they absolutely hate him. This is the tweet that got him kicked off. And now you can find him on Substack, by the way. Alex Berenson said, it doesn't stop infection, and it doesn't stop transmission. That's absolutely true. We know that. CDC admits that. I don't think of it, he says, as a vaccine. Think of it, at best, as a therapeutic with a limited window of efficacy and terrible side effect profile that must be dosed in advance of illness. And we want to mandate it? This is insanity. That was what got him kicked off of Twitter. Which is why I say, please make sure, if you're following me on Twitter, make sure that you know where you can find me at thedavidknightshow.com. Because just as we've been kicked off by PayPal, by Venmo, by Spotify, it is just a matter of time. I'm on Gab, too, by the way. On Gab, David Knight Show on Twitter, Libertarian is where you'll find me. But make sure that you go to The David Knight Show, because that's where you're going to find the updated list as these things change. Because even though we've been kicked off by some of the major platforms, we have picked up some other platforms. And so there's some new places where you can watch the show. As a matter of fact, we're now live streaming on Odyssey. Is that correct, Travis? We're on Odyssey now. Yep, that's working on Odyssey. So we're doing live streaming there, and we have live stream of the audio that you'll find at both APS Radio and also at aftermath.fm, aftermath.fm. And so there's a lot of new places where we're headed, and we're working on some others as well. But since we have corporations that are allowed to rule over us, make sure you go there to find links to the podcast, links to the video broadcasts and archives and so forth that we keep up. By the way, we also have the video is up on Trovo and DLive, and there are chat rooms that people seem to enjoy quite a bit on those platforms as well. So on the live live stream broadcasts, especially the video broadcast, you'll find some chat rooms, and you might find that of interest as well. When you look at Alex Berenson, he's been in the crosshairs for quite a while by these people because he was a well-known reporter for the New York Times. And then the New York Times decided that they weren't interested in the truth anymore, just like Rolling Stones was no longer interested in anything other than agenda. So Matt Taibbi is now gone, and he's on Substack. And same thing with Glenn Greenwald, who is no longer with The Intercept, and he's also on Substack as well. The government was hoping that they could sort of sucker 90% of the population into getting vaccinated, said Berenson, and that isn't happening. In his full speech, he slammed big tech for controlling narratives and for censoring divergent opinions, which they've now done. As one person commented, said, "Bring back Alex Berenson. You have no expertise on COVID or on any matters outside of programming." Said that too at Twitter, and that's true. They don't. But when you look at the press, this has become, going back to April the 1st, April Fool's Day, by the way, you had The Atlantic, which is nothing other than a propaganda port for the government, for the globalists, for NATO, that is going bankrupt. But, of course, it'll be bailed out. But The Atlantic, back on April Fool's Day, called Alex Berenson the pandemic's wrongest man, the wrongest man. Yeah, I guess those are the new, is that the new speech rules? Because they do have new speech rules for all of us. The terms that we're supposed to use, the CDC is now giving us speech rules. And other outlets are saying, do not use the term OCD. Why would they not want you to use the term OCD? Well, because that's what they've turned America into, and the rest of the world, by the way. I said that over a year ago. After we were into this only about a month, I said, I can't believe this. We're turning into, America's turned into an OCD nation. I mean, we'd have people like Mike Adams saying, wear the mask, why isn't Fauci making us wear the mask? What's the matter with him? He should be telling everybody to wear the mask. Now, if you don't want to wear the mask, you're going to wind up getting the vaccine. I said, no, the mask is a placeholder for the vaccine. You know that. You know that. He knew that. In April, Alex Berenson was branded by The Atlantic as the pandemic's wrongest man. They said he has a big megaphone. He has more than 200,000 followers on Twitter. Millions of viewers for his frequent appearances on Fox News. So he needs to be taken out. And they went through in that article going back to April the 1st, April Fool's Day article from The Atlantic. Berenson's claim, in country after country, quote, cases rise after the vaccination campaigns began, he wrote in an email. And then they come back and counter that with, here's their fact. In country after country, they said, in reality, in country after country, cases decline after the vaccination campaigns began. They don't offer any proof of that. It's just he says this, and we say he's wrong, and this is what we say. I've shown, as a matter of fact, I showed it before he mentioned that, you had a lot of people who had done the study. The most detailed one was from a French epidemiologist, and she went through country after country after country showing cases and the timeline and how they just plummeted to zero when people started using ivermectin and stayed at zero until they introduced the vaccines and then just shot straight up. She did it all over Europe, country by country, in Asia. Mongolia was one of the best examples of that, too. But you could see it in every one of these countries. and the Middle East, Europe, as I said, all these different places, they don't want to talk about that. They don't offer any evidence. Again, this is just an argument from authority because the Atlantic is nothing other than a propaganda portal. Again, Berenson's claim, they said, Pfizer's clinical trial data proves that the companies are being shady about vaccine efficacy. And that's true. They said, in reality, this is a mischaracterization of the trial data, but they don't explain. They don't defend this. On and on. We see this over and over again. I won't go through all of their counterclaims, but the point is they can claim that he's the wrongest person ever, and this is now being repeated as he was banned. Mediaite, Raw Story, all of them in the headlines, they call him the wrongest man. The wrongest man. I imagine he's getting a pretty good laugh from that as somebody who writes for a living. New York Post, owned by Murdoch, who makes a lot of money off of pharmaceuticals, calls him a vaccine doubter as they talk about him being banned. But I think the worst thing was what I saw in terms of the people who were cheering this on, demanding more of it, the mob, the authoritarian mob, people like Carolyn Orr Bueno. Is that for real? PhD. Good to see Alex Berenson get permanently suspended for habitually spreading vaccine misinformation. But this should have been done a long time ago. Twitter allowed him to stay on here, build an audience, and stir up a lot of grievance, which he'll now use on another platform. And on and on. And so this is the type of thing when I talked about Mitt Romney and his contempt for liberty in the Constitution. This is the kind of response I got yesterday morning. Most of it were death wishes for me. And the rest of it was to kill me on social media. James Bovard said that now that Alex Berenson is banned from Twitter, maybe the efficacy of the Pfizer COVID vaccine will finally rebound. Yeah, exactly. But going back to Romney, here's what he had to say. Headline from the Salt Lake Tribune. Your liberty affects my health. The Utah senator would implement vaccine mandates if he was still in private business. And so what he says in the article, he says, the people who are vaccine hesitant are also authority hesitant. That's right, because this is not about science or medicine. This is about political power. And we're hesitant about the authority. I've said many times, even if I believed that this was 100% safe and 100% effective, I would still oppose it being mandated. I would still oppose a system of vaccine, present your papers, please, passports everywhere. To live life as a condition of government-granted privilege, that is far more dangerous than any real pandemic. And this is not a real pandemic when about 25% of the people are affected by this and die from this, skewed towards the elderly, by their own data, if you believe their data. And we know their data is inflated. Again, they can't distinguish, and they admit it. The PCR tests do not distinguish between COVID, between flu, between cold, between RSV. They certainly do not distinguish between variants. And they don't have the tests and aren't using them to make the distinction between the variants. So whenever they tell you about a variant, what they're talking about is a variance against the Constitution, V-A-R-I-A-N-C-E, right? Not the variant, but a variance. We got a waiver here, right? So he says, the people who are vaccine hesitant are also authority hesitant. You know, the founders of America were authority hesitant, Mitt. That Constitution that you swore to uphold, that was there because they don't trust people in authority. He said, they don't trust the media. They don't trust politicians when they say vaccines are a good idea. Neither did the founders of this country. This country was not based upon trust of politicians. We have different branches of governments and a division of power and checks and balances because we know that politicians of all people cannot be trusted. We know that, as Madison said, men are not angels, which is why we have government. But because they're not angels, we must, you know, have these checks and balances on them, as you had others say. Patrick Henry said, guard anybody who approaches the precious jewel of liberty, especially somebody like Mitt Romney. I wouldn't let him come near my dog. We've seen what he does to dogs. Don't trust politicians, he said. When they say the vaccines are a good idea, we should trust them when they say they're a good idea. He said they tune it out, and they turn to the Internet, where they can find people who are anonymous, giving them bad information. I'm not anonymous, Romney. I sent that tweet to you. Maybe that's one of the reasons why I had all your little bots saying I need to be kicked off. I need to die. Because I sent it directly to you, Mitt. I hope you saw it. Romney says local school board should be allowed to decide the best course of action for students. See? No parents. This guy is a dyed-in-the-wool global authoritarian. The only difference between Mitt Romney and Donald Trump is the fact that Mitt Romney owns it. Donald Trump is still deceiving you. We should keep the decision-making as close to the people as possible, but not with the parents, not with that sphere of authority. People say, I want my liberty. Well, your liberty affects my health. And when that occurs, we have to come to some sort of agreement. Well, I do not agree. We have a constitution that says that. And, of course, history has told us that those who give up their liberty for the promise of safety deserve neither. Franklin said that, and history has shown that they get neither either. You wind up, when you try to trade off your liberty for security and safety, you wind up with nothing, nothing. Because to the degree that you give up your liberty, to that degree you become a slave. Slaves are not safe. Slaves are not secure. Slaves are not prosperous. And so every time you try to feed another finger to the shark, or a hand, or an arm, every time you do that, you're worse off than you were before. So we have Brandeis University expanding the list of words and phrases to avoid. Yeah, there's certain things they don't want you to say. So they put together a dozen words and phrases, but I thought it was very interesting that in this, and they kind of focused on this in the article from the New York Post, the additions include, I'm so OCD. And again, as I said earlier, why do you think they would focus on obsessive compulsive disorder? Because that's what they've inculcated in the population over the last year. It only took them about a month or so to do that. And when you look at the CDC has its own list now of preferred terms. The CDC. Why is the CDC giving you the kind of phrases? This is August the 24th from the CDC. This is just last week they put this out. Why is the CDC telling you which words you should use? And this is, you know, beyond the kind of typical stuff that you expect, terms that you're supposed to use when talking about the LGBT, or terms that you're supposed to use when you're talking about illegal aliens. Instead of, they say, for example, instead of illegals or illegal immigrants or illegal aliens or illegal migrants or foreigners or foreign-born, try this. People with undocumented status, that typical thing. That's been around for a while. But again, why is the CDC putting this out? And why did they put this out last week? Or when you look at the LGBT, right? They're doing all this stuff. You know, don't say that somebody is homosexual. Call them queer. Or call them pansexual or asexual or transgender or whatever, right? A two-spirit. Yeah, demon-possessed. we are legion, the LGBT, the legion of these people. So they're putting out the usual stuff, but they go beyond that. And the most interesting thing about their speech codes, and again, why is the CDC putting out speech codes, this quasi-governmental organization, quasi just like the Federal Reserve, which is private but pretends that it's federal. The CDC is private, pretends that it is federal. It has a foot in both branches, but it is a 501c3 corporation. They own patents. They make profits from selling vaccines and so forth. They're not strictly a federal agency. But they put out, the very first one that they put out was, in terms of preferred terms, instead of inmate, prisoner, convict, offender, criminal, parolee, detainee, why would they start with that list? Why would the CDC retread all of these politically correct terms about immigrants and about LGBT and about the handicapped and disabled? And why would they put prisoners, why would they recycle all that? And why would they begin with prisoners, the same people who in July 2020 came up with their idea of green zones incarceration and quarantine camps like we see already being done in Australia and New Zealand. So instead of calling somebody a detainee or a criminal, call them people who are incarcerated or detained for maybe a shorter period or stay. Or call them the partner or child of an incarcerated person or persons in pretrial before charging. Or call them people who were formerly incarcerated or persons on parole or probation or non-U.S. citizens or people in immigration detention facilities or maybe people who are in our quarantine camps. We see yet another example of banks being used to cancel people. Chase Bank has now canceled General Flynn's credit cards. And again, I don't like what General Flynn is doing with Trump at all. I don't support any of that stuff. I don't support the Stop the Steal garbage. I didn't support it before. It's a key reason why I was fired. I thought it was absolutely wrong approach. Getting behind the wrong person for all the wrong reasons. Ignoring what is happening with the lockdown, the global imprisonment, the global prison planet that is happening now. So I didn't support that. I thought Flynn and Mike Lindell were pushing for some kind of a civil war. I didn't support any of that stuff. But when we look at the way this is rolling out, yet again, somebody having all of their bank accounts shut down, we should be very, very concerned about that. When we look at what is happening with the CDC, of course, finally last week, and I mentioned it a little bit on Friday, a very key thing, and I said that this is what was going to happen. When the CDC, under President Trump, last fall, took the authority, just as they're now telling us what we can say and what we cannot say, they decided that they would assert and usurp authority over private property and all private contracts, that they would say that you cannot evict somebody for not paying rent and you cannot foreclose on a mortgage. And then that was extended a couple of times under Trump, and then it was extended a couple more times under Biden, and then when it was about ready to expire, it had been fought in court after court. They'd lost over and over again. They only had one win. They had four losses, or maybe five. I think it was four to lower court, one loss at an upper court, and then they won one finally. And then went to the Supreme Court, and five out of four judges said, you don't have this authority, which is what most of the courts had said. It's obvious that they don't have that authority. They're not even a real legitimate governmental organization. And yet you had Brett Kavanaugh say, well, I think it would be disruptive for us to stop them because they said they're going to stop it on their own in a month. And then when the month ended, they didn't do it. So then it came back up to the Supreme Court. And then last week, I reported it on Friday, the Supreme Court said, no, you're done. And this time it wasn't a 5-4. This time, not only did Kavanaugh say that, but you also had John Roberts flip. So it's like, all right, great, they finally got the right answer. They're still going to do what they intended to do. I said when they did this last, and it was either September or October, I think it was October when this happened, and I said, if you allow them to do this, under the pretense, of course, that if people were homeless, that that would make the pandemic worse, except that the homeless people weren't dying on the streets, were they? That was another one of the things, data points that shows that this is not a pandemic. When I have the same homeless people panhandling on my car day after day after day without wearing a mask, it's like, yeah, there you go. There's more evidence that there's no pandemic here. But under that presumption, under that lie, they took this over. And I reported over and over again about what was happening with people, some of them poor immigrants who had fled communist China, living in New York City, working menial jobs, waiting tables, or not even waiting tables because they don't have the language skills, but, you know, as janitors and things like that, cleaning hotel rooms, saving their money, taking out, getting enough for a down payment, taking out a loan, and then buying some rental property to try to accumulate wealth and to, you know, step up the ladder. Many of them had debts when I reported that at the beginning of the year already of $80,000. And I said, you understand what this is about. By putting this in there, first of all, the CDC is usurping unbelievable amounts of authority. Trump is with them. Biden was with them as well on that. But they were creating balloon notes so that when they finally took this off, these people would lose their property. And now that's what's happening. It is being presented on one side as the renters, victims, preparing for eviction after the Supreme Court ruling. And yet, you know, these are people who supposedly the government was protecting them, giving them stimulus and so forth. But it's also the people who are property owners who are on the line, who are going to lose everything. As one person said, what good is freedom if you can't keep your own property? And so these people who now have balloon notes, as I predicted, they are going to lose their property. As the moratorium is lifted, it will also lift it for them, but they'll be the ones left with a balloon note. A veteran landlord faces homelessness after the moratorium barred her from evicting tenants. Now, this is the CDC, so we're going to stop homelessness, but instead, what they're doing is they're going to make this person who had worked hard, saved her money, invested her money, and she's going to become homeless because of the CDC. Brandy Lacasse has been waiting on rent for nearly a year. I've talked about some of these landlords as they were complaining about this. Some of them said, yeah, these guys over here, they've got the money. They just don't want to pay me because the CDC says they don't have to. He said they just bought a $25,000 boat. She's been waiting on rent for nearly a year. She owns three properties in upstate New York, but the single mother and the Air Force veteran is functionally homeless after falling on hard times herself. She's owed more than $23,000 in unpaid rent due to federal and state-imposed eviction moratoriums. She and her daughters have been pushed into living out of their cars and staying with friends. I've cried many nights thinking, where is my money? I don't understand how they can give my private property to somebody to live for free. I bought that property. I fixed it up with my blood, sweat, and tears. This is why these Marxists, these open Marxists like AOC and the Squad and now Senator Markey, Markey the Marxist in Massachusetts, why they held a rally and said, we need to stop all rent. We need to take over all private property because they're Marxists and they owned it. They're out there saying, let's sing a song from that good socialist, that good communist who wrote, this land is your land, this land is my land, right? And he did that. Woody Guthrie wrote that in response to a song that he really hated, God Bless America. Because in that song, it begins, when it was first introduced, it began with, I can't remember her name now, Kate, whatever her name is, but the fat lady. It wasn't over till the fat lady sang it. She kicked it off. But she started, and it was done in 1938. I remember that. It was Irving Berlin, who actually loved America, wrote a lot of White Christmas and all these other things, not so many songs that he wrote in 101 years. But he wrote that, and it began with an introductory verse before you hear the, Kate Smith was her name, before you hear the God Bless America, land that I love, stand beside her and guide her with a through the night with a light from above. It began by saying, talking about how dark things were overseas, because that was 1938. And we know what was happening in 1938. Everybody knew what was happening in 1938 in Nazi Germany. But it relied, it began by talking about, we will keep the light of freedom in this country and appealing to God to preserve our liberty. And that is why that communist, that Marxist, that socialist, Woody Guthrie, hated that. Because he hates two things that they hate. Well, three things. Nobody likes the Marxist Inquisition, right? There's three things that they will come after. They hate liberty. They hate private property. And they hate God. And so his response was to, in God Bless America, from the mountains to the prairies to the oceans white with foam. So he did the same thing. He kind of mimicked that and then spun it into a Marxist thing, saying this land is your land, this land belongs to you and me as a mob. And then he talks about how he saw a sign that said private property. But when I went over the fence, it didn't say anything on the backside. So, hey, just mocking the whole idea of private property. And that's what Senator Marxist Markey and the Squad, that's what they were doing, singing that, this land is your land, this is land is my land, saying, we're going to stop all rent and all private property. That's what these people are about. This is not hyperbole to call these people communists. They admit it themselves. And this is what this is about. as this one person, her tenant, Carla MacArthur, said, I feel bad. I haven't been able to pay her. We've gone from two incomes. I've had COVID twice. I'm not sure what she'll do when the moratorium's lifted. And that's, well, what she's going to do, she's going to lose her property and she will become homeless. I reported on that time after time. You know, 45% of the property that people rent, they call people landlords. These people are not lords and ladies. They're not wealthy. They have tried to be frugal, to save, to invest, to work hard. And they're having all that stolen from them by the CDC, by the banks. By the banks. You don't think that Trump was owned by the banks? Did you see who he put in there? One of his Goldman Sachs left and right. Put in Cohen, who got a $200 million golden parachute to go set things up in the Trump administration. We were ruled from the very beginning in the Trump administration by bankers, Goldman Sachs bankers, and Pentagon bureaucrats from day one, and pharmaceutical executives like Alex Azar, Scott Gottlieb, and these others. And so these people have worked their web of deceit. I said from the very beginning it's going to be a balloon note, and you're going to see that they're going to use this to take the property. And who will get it? The banks. The banks will get the property. So the people who didn't pay the rent, they'll be out. They'll have to find another place to live, but they'll find another place. But then the other people who had invested all that money, they will lose everything. So what good is freedom if you can't keep your own property? This is also applies to the farm bill, as Biden is now reviving methods to try to take away the family farm. Because we don't want anybody, this is Agenda 21, we do not want anybody living outside of the cities. We do not want anybody independent. And if you don't understand where this is headed, this is today it's the vaccine. Tomorrow it will be food. It will be meat. You will not be allowed, because of humanitarian reasons, we already see this happening in Colorado and many other places. Pork is disappearing, going to be disappearing from California because they put out arbitrary rules in the name of animal welfare. You got to have this much space around the pigs and so forth. And they don't want you eating pigs. They don't want you eating chicken. They're going to clone chicken breasts, or are you doing it? Cloning chicken breasts from chicken feathers. All this stuff will be produced in labs, and you'll buy your Soylent Green from Bill Gates. He will outlaw people raising their own food and having their own farms, and they will do it in a variety of ways. Part of it is by taking the farms away from people when someone in the family dies with taxes. But they will prohibit all of this. If we do not stop this, we won't have cars to drive. They'll prohibit the alcohol. They'll prohibit the food if we don't buy it from Bill Gates, in the same way that you can't have any medicine unless it is done by the pharmaceutical establishment buying the products of the people who have already bought the government. That's it for today's broadcast. Thank you for listening.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.